Morning.
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 Well, just to let you know, I've started the beard. I'm going to grow a beard, I decided. I was inspired by Rich Cimino and Jason Peasley.
They both have pretty good beards.
Yep. And my beard grows fast. I don't think it'll take long. So,
when's the last time you had a beard?
Oh, it's probably been 25 or 30 years, I'm going to guess.
Wow. That's impressive. Well, that's how Will won favor with my grandfather, was by having a great beard. My grandpa's a big beard fan. And so that's how Will was accepted into our family.
It seems like the thing nowadays. I don't want to be out of step with modern trends.
Fair enough.
Well, it's easier to keep it trimmed when nobody can see you that close either.
Good point.
Of course, the problem is when I had my beard last time, it was a big, beautiful, bushy red beard. And I don't think that's what's going to happen this time. So,
are you a redhead, Tim?
No, but it was pretty strange. I was blondish brown before I turned gray, but my beard was pretty red. It was kind of a strange look.
That's Will too. I mean, you guys have met Will. He has a kind of dirty blonde hair, and then his beard is very red.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes.
Keep us updated on your progress.
Oh, you'll be able to see it.
That'll probably be the easiest decision we make all day today, Tim. So we're good. We're going to support your beard.
All right. Yeah.
I am wholeheartedly supportive of the beard.
Maybe a resolution would be appropriate. Well, let's wait and see what my wife says. She hasn't actually noticed yet. I'm day three, so we'll
see. She probably just thought you were being lazy.
Yeah, probably so. All right, let's go ahead and get to work. So Mark, you're up first. Oh no, I guess I need to do the, actually this looks a little odd on our update. Mark, did you think that we would be going into executive session for your update? Or are we reserving that for Eric's item? Number 3.
Tim, reserving it for Eric's side of his discussion.
Right? Okay. So let's do your update without going into executive session.
You bet. Good morning, commissioners. I'm going to, because I know you've got a really busy agenda today. So let me go quickly through the items that I had for your review and your discussion. You received, I believe, from me an outline last evening of those topics that I think are kind of on the front stove and which have been occupying, I know, a great deal of time in my office. The first thing that I just wanted a very quick reference to is the Munis Tyler ERP software. You will have a very detailed, very comprehensive overview of where we are with the Munis system this coming Wednesday. And it's something we've been working on very diligently with all the project managers. We've had many, many meetings, many, many discussions on that. We wanted to fine tune this so that when we make this presentation to you on Wednesday, we feel it'll give you a very timely and very current update in terms of where we are on the ERP software platform. Most of our project managers will join us for that discussion. So there's a good chance if you want to go ahead and talk about specific modules or aspects that we talk about, then we're going to have those people on the call to be able to respond to those accordingly going forward. So looking forward to that. And I know, Tim, most especially you in particular, are looking forward to that update.
I think we're all looking forward to it. I'm just the one harping on some kind of a written schedule. And I guess at this point, I no longer really care that much. I just like to know that it's moving in the right direction and that we're getting somewhere. So,
and Mark, that update I assume includes all the GFOA recommendation Right. I think they were all related to the software, but
Yes, Beth, okay. we'll weave into that so that you get a full update in terms of where we were relative to that report that was provided by GFOA. Absolutely, you bet.
Sounds good.
Campus security, courthouse campus security. We had several good discussions last week and the week before on this very important topic. And I wanted to give you some current updates. The most important of which is, I know two very important recommendations last week from the commissioners was the fact that we explore the possibility of maybe asking local law enforcement to do some walkthroughs through the building itself. We've gotten a positive response on that, and that can be deployed as soon as this week. And in fact, I got a very nice note from the Steamboat Police Chief, who said that they'd be happy to go ahead and implement that again this week. The second piece that we talked about, commissioners, was the fact that we wanted to go back to the employees of the courthouse and the annex and talk to them a little bit more about their concerns about security going forward. We're happy to do that. We're going to do that in combination with both HR and facilities management. But one of the things that I've asked to be accelerated is one concern that was expressed by the treasurer's office relative to some of the physical components in their office. One of the recommendations of many from True North was to upgrade that physical security in that particular office area. And so what I've asked facilities management is to go ahead and accelerate that. And we'll be getting some quotes and some bids to the commissioners in terms of some of those physical enhancements, some of the glass that would be at the front counter space, some of the additional security that would be provided to that main door going into the treasurer's office. We expect to have that information back to you very shortly so that we can move on that as quickly as possible, given the direction from the county commissioners. You may recall once again that what we did is, at your direction, we earmarked $95,000 in this fiscal year for ongoing security enhancements, components for the courthouse and county facilities overall. So let me stop there for a second and see if we have any questions on that.
I do. I had forgotten to pay my second half taxes until this morning when I realized reading the email about waiving interest. And so I quickly went online and was able to pay my taxes. And I thought it was a pretty seamless transaction. And I guess my question is maybe tangential to this, but maybe not so much. What services does the Rauch County Treasurer provide in person that it cannot do digitally?
Tim, that's a good question. And I, quite frankly, I don't want to answer that without having input from Lane, because I don't want to in any way make it be an error or anything else, but we will be happy to go ahead and get that information to you. I know in my discussion with Lane on Thursday of last week, late Thursday, one of the things that she mentioned is that we've got sometimes a lot of cash transactions that occur. Sometimes some cash transactions that occur relative to the cannabis industry. And so we have concerns about just exactly our exposure when we're dealing with that amount of cash. The other thing that Lane volunteered was we will, and probably in this current fiscal environment, we may see an uptick in terms of some of the foreclosures. And when we have that as an activity, sometimes that ramps up emotions. And we can get people sometimes a little bit nervous and concerned when those kind of activities occur. So we want to make sure once again that we're safe and secure when we have those kinds of things going on in close proximity to our employees in that office. Those are just two items, Tim, that I know that Lane and I visited about last week.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Doug, you're muted.
Sorry about that. So yeah, I have a question too, Mark. So I'm supportive of that. And again, times are changing and it's not the same world, you know, it was a while ago. So even 10 years, you know, 5 years ago. So I guess my question what's the process to agree to the enhancements, and what are the enhancements? I mean, so I want to make sure that we don't do it twice, or we got it, and well, I wanted this and we didn't get that. And so, or we got this. And so I just want to make sure that again, I don't need to beat up the consultant on the study, but I think that some improvements need to be done there. And again, especially the front bulletproof glass or something, and the rest of having money and the rest. So, I don't need to micromanage it, and I don't want to do that too. I just want to make sure we have a process that Lane signs off for somebody, and Lane and Steve are working together on, and you coming up with that solution. So,
that's Doug. That's exactly where we are. And you know, in visiting with Lane in particular, I think she was concerned that those physical improvements that I just described had been put on the back burner for quite a long period of time. And given the activities that I just described as well, I really feel like we need to go ahead and accelerate the bids and the quotes for those physical improvements. So again, that's what I've asked facilities management to do. Now, we'll get that information back, we'll get those quotes, we'll get those bids back, and then we want to have a follow-up conversation with the commissioners in terms of moving forward on that. But that's, quite frankly, I've asked for that to be put in the fast lane so we get that back as quickly as we can. Now, still going forward are some other physical enhancements that we feel are appropriate and are something that will be well utilized and very functional for the courthouse and the annex to use as the balance of the $95,000. And we'll bring that back to you with, again, your review and your feedback and your endorsement. But I think we've got a good plan going forward, but I wanted to emphasize how quickly we wanted to move on those treasury improvements, because I really think that they're a really top priority right now. With that, commissioners, let me mention that the health monitoring and education, you had a really good, I think, positive report from Mo and from Scott last week about the visitations that they made in terms of going to businesses, going to retailers, and talk about, again, this outreach that we want to do, monitoring and education, that vigilance piece. And I think, as you heard from them, it was very, very well received. They had very good positive responses. And one of the things that was highlighted in their discussions was the need for maybe something that was a contact card, an information card, something that they could have that business owner or that business representative could have after the visitation, especially if they had any follow-up questions or anything else that may come up with. Robin has been good enough to do a draft of that particular, what we'll call that contact card. And I believe in the next 24 hours, she's going to provide a draft of that to you, certainly before the close of business today. So we'd appreciate your feedback, your input on the information that we'll have in that particular piece of very important contact with, again, our business community. I also want to emphasize that in addition to the Steamboat Springs area, where we conducted some of those visitations last Friday, we've also deployed some of our other county personnel, specifically the planning department, that are going to outreach to other areas of the county so that we can get a little bit more global reach with those kind of outreaches. And I see Robin's on the call, so maybe she wants to chime in on that contact card.
No, I have the copy. I can send it to you. So I was just working with Julie Kennedy to get pricing from your preferred vendor.
Thanks. Commissioners, the last item is kind of a beefy one, and I know that we're going to talk about that in a great more detail, but I wanted to walk through some of the things that we've been working on with public health in terms of some very important initiatives. The first thing I'll lead with is the fact that you were copied on some information from Carrie, I believe, that mentioned the fact that indeed the CARES Act funding coming through CDPHE has been identified for Rock County. And I think the good news is, from what we thought was going to maybe be some lower estimates, We've actually identified that as $438,855.77. So actually a good deal more than we expected. We thought we'd be maybe in the $300,000 range. So this is good news. I sent documents to you via Carrie that talks about some of our proposals that we would put forward to utilize those funds and utilize them specifically for our ongoing COVID response. And where Carrie and Dr. Harrington and other people in her department feel we can best utilize that fund going forward, especially over the next several months. It will require or will request of you that we will deploy more personnel resources to this effort. But I think that based upon what we've observed so far, based on the feedback from public health and their workload to date, I think that these are very appropriate expenditures and ones that I feel that, and Tim, I know you had a very good article that you shared with the rest of us with what's going on in some other jurisdictions and their concerns about having the right resources available and not putting them, you know, at risk in terms of trying to do everything and have those limited abilities. I think it's very important that we think about that going forward, even though I understand with a hiring freeze, with questions that we've got about our financial status, I still believe with this CARES Act funding through coming through CDPHE, that it's going to be a wise and discretionary use of those funds. I'll end there. I know Carrie's going to enter our conversation about this, but let me pause there in case there's some feedback from the commissioners.
I had one big question. It appeared as if CDPHE was requesting a 30-month budget for those expenditures. And it appears to me that Carrie has developed a budget that would expend most of those funds in the next 6 months. Do I have that wrong? I mean, do we have the ability to spread out that money over 2.5 years, or do we have to spend it by the end of the year?
Tim, we'll have to double check that. That's an excellent question because, of course, we know the CARES Act funding, what we'll call the general CARES Act funding, has that deadline right now of December 30th, 2020. If that was a caveat that was included in some of the information from CDPHE, we will double check that to see just exactly what that time horizon is. But that's a good catch, Tim, and we'll find out just exactly what the circumstances are behind that.
I didn't see that unless I missed it on the, did that email come from Carrie or did that come from you, Mark?
It came from Kendra. Kendra forwarded it on behalf of Mark.
Correct. Right. So Doug, it did.
It came was from just Kendra, this morning though.
Just now. Okay.
There should be yeah. Three attachments that come with that.
Got it. Thank you.
Three attachments that come with that.
So Mark, I just want to say generally, I agree with you that we have to do something about the public health department. Carrie is working way too much and it's not sustainable. And we know that across the state, we're seeing people leave public health in droves. And I think the worst thing that could happen to us right now would be to lose some of our public health staff. I think we have to commit to moving pretty quickly. And I know she outlined in there some shorter term things and then some long-term changes she'd like to see in the department. And I think both of those are worthy of discussion. We're at a year now that we've been trying this thing. And of course it's been sort of trial by fire, but I think we have to be prepared to evaluate what's working and what's not. The question I would have, if you could help us get this information, actually, and it looks like Carrie is on the line now, so maybe she just knows, is when we're talking about the CDPHE contracts, what kind of dollar amount we're talking about and how much of the longer term expenses that are being proposed might be able to be covered by those contracts versus having to be county expenditures. So I don't know if Carrie, if you're prepared to answer that question for us or not, or Mark, if you.
Well, I think we need a little early to be talking about all of that. So I mean, I guess I hadn't even read the memo, and I think we need, I'm sympathetic to the process here and where we're moving, but we have a whole, I mean, were we planning on getting this done or providing direction today, or?
I guess my thought, Doug, is I don't think we're making any final decisions right now, but there seems to be some urgency in getting public health the support they need. And so I, at least on those short-term items that are listed in there on a contractual basis, I think we should definitely be moving forward pretty quickly. And those are in relation to the pandemic, but then I do think that the proposal for the kind of longer term items, we should just be looking at those in relation to the public health contracts, which would be within the next couple weeks. So not that we have to make a final decision, but I do think we should be considering that all in total, because I think where we want to head would dictate how we want to structure those, that the provision of those contracts. You know, if we're not, if we were in fact to move forward with changing the shared director model, that would probably change how we wanted to structure those contracts too, as a one county versus a two county. So I just think we need to probably be prepared to move pretty quickly. I wasn't thinking we would make any decision today. I mean, we obviously just got the information this morning, but that's just kind of my inclination on the whole thing. And well, I do think those contract numbers are important.
I'm fine with moving forward quickly, but not today because I haven't read any of that stuff.
I'm with you, Doug. I'm not trying to steamroll you.
Well, and again, I it's all good. And, you know, again, it's kind of like, you know, I know there's needs out there and what we're doing. I agree there's some long-term needs and some short-term needs, and we need to determine what the level of effort that's being put out there, and based on the resources that we can put forward and based on the resources that are going to be brought forward. So I'm all good with all that. And again, back to this CDPHE CARES fund, direct funding. Hell yeah, if we can do whatever we can do to get people on board to minimize the risk and strengthen the security system that's being paid for, and that was the intent of the program from the senators and the Congress and the president, whatever. So let's put it to use if we don't have a use for it. So they're probably the same way as the rest of it's going to go away. So let's try to make our community safer and better, and hopefully we can help the recovery of it. So I'm all fine with that part. I don't want to get mixed up too much with the short term and long term and the CARES and making sure we understand where we're heading here. I see Carrie wanting to talk, so.
Yeah, let me jump in. Because we have limited access to Carrie given her schedule, even though we may not all have had an opportunity to fully review the materials she gave us, I think it would be helpful if she made some comments. And Carrie, I have just a couple of direct questions that might help inform us moving forward. But go ahead, Carrie, please.
Thank you. I can only be on just for a couple minutes. I have a vulnerable populations meeting in just a minute, but I appreciate you reviewing this request. Really, the intent of the request is to not just for the staffing of the public health, but also for the economic recovery of the community. I want us to be successful with what opening, reopening, staying open, all of that. And I feel like the public health really has a lot to offer as far as the economic recovery. So that's just my comment to that. So I appreciate the review of this.
And Carrie, do you know it, kind of the approximate dollar numbers of those CDPHE contracts? And do you have a sense of how much of that could be retained to support public health staff at the county? If you don't know the answer yet, that's all right.
I have a spreadsheet that I can send you that has it all lined out as far as the contracts we currently have through CDPHE through the end of June, and then also some anticipated contracts, I guess, we may have access to. So I'm happy to send that. I can send that in just a little bit here as part of your review of all the total funding package from CDPHE.
Carrie, I know you need to leave real quickly. Did I get that right, that CDPHE was asking for a 30-month budget on the CARES funding? Or am I?
We're getting some clarification today on that, so I don't want to comment just yet on that. If I may, I'd like to just wait until there was a draft scope of work that I attached, but that's not the final scope of work. And then there also is going to be some finalization on the CalFlow document. So I don't know for sure where it's going to all land at with the total budget contract year.
Carrie, I don't know is always the appropriate answer.
I don't know. And particularly when there's so many different entities and it's all moving so fast. There's a lot of moving parts right now. I think we've all discovered that.
Yeah, so, I think you could give us the right answer today and it'd be wrong tomorrow. So we're good.
I would just say that personally on those items that are short term for contracted labor, where we're talking about nurses, epidemiology, where we're not making a hire or an expansion of services and it's specific to the emergency response, I think we should just say that those can be moved forward. And then I think what needs more discussion is the long-term changes.
Actually, I might disagree a little bit, or maybe I'd agree if I had more information. But my concern with looking at Carrie's work plan and allocation of dollars was that there was a huge percentage of it that was devoted to testing over the next 6 months. And I guess I'd like to have further conversations about that. So we can let Carrie go. Go ahead, Carrie.
Well, I was just going to make, if I can make a comment about that, I think the immediacy of the testing and the partnerships with the various businesses and the ski resort and all of that is really surrounding this reopening concept of the economy. And so I think that as far as front loading that testing capacity, that's the logic behind that. And certainly more discussion is very welcome on that. I just want to commit to us being available, partnering, and making sure that we're successful with the partnerships that people have reached out to us asking to partner in order to make sure their employees and staff are safe and stay healthy. So that's why the front load on that, Commissioner Corrigan.
So do you suppose we should carve out commissioners 20 or 30 minutes on Wednesday, in addition to everything else we're doing, to have a more in-depth discussion about this? And then
go ahead.
And then potentially provide some actual direction to Carrie?
I just don't know if I would try to squeeze it into the Board of Health meeting. I think we should probably, we'd probably need to see where there's time, but I would say as soon as possible, we should carve out some discussion time with Carrie. And this really is more of a county, BCC conversation. I don't think it has to be Board of Health. It's a staffing, and emergency response. But I would say, yes, we should schedule time for follow-up discussion so that we can move forward on those emergency items as soon as possible.
So Carrie, can you get with Deanna and Kendra and maybe find some time on Thursday or Friday or whatever?
Or whenever. There might be time Wednesday. I could be wrong. I just haven't looked at that agenda yet.
I think it's Carrie's time that's at stake here, so.
Yes, I absolutely will, and I have to jump off because I'm actually facilitating this meeting that's starting now. But thank you for your time.
See you, Carrie.
Thanks, Carrie.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
So for Mark and Kendra, too, I since she's left, and I still would like the dog and pony show, so if we can come up and have the basics 101 of the dog and pony show of what we're talking about in the whole thing. So just so... Again, when we schedule time, back to Beth's comments, not necessarily Board of Health, but it's, kind of, and we are learning by doing on this thing here since, I guess. So anyhow.
We will absolutely schedule a good time slot to be able to have adequate time to be able to discuss all of these and make sure that we answer all of your questions and get good direction. There's two things that I would queue up for the commissioners this morning. And commissioners, quite frankly, I wanted to go ahead and get these on your radar screen because I know we are going to need to talk about them in more detail and give you this precursor as we talk about these very important items. But there's two things that we will ask of you in terms of your endorsement. The first is, and I'll let Beth chime in on this because I know she's been a very important part of this conversation. We have reached out to CDPHE and their director, and Beth has been good enough to be a very important liaison on that conversation about the potential of having our public health department take over what has been the ongoing contracts that have been overseen by Northwest Colorado Health. And we've got some good feedback from CDPHE and also told us a little bit about the mechanics. And in essence, they said, if you want to move forward on that, you have our support. And all we need from you, Rob County, is a letter specifying that you would like to move forward and have those contracts be under your particular jurisdiction. And Beth, I'll let you chime in. But I had a draft letter that Carrie helped us with that is now been sent to you through Kendra that is a draft of what we would send through to CDPHE if the commissioners are comfortable with that direction. But Beth, I'll let you, I know you've got good detail on this.
Well, and I know that I think Carrie has a very similar letter coming from Moffitt County saying the same thing and had separated those out. And I think, you know, it's the preference of CDPHE to actually contract with the LPHA, which is us. And it's, as we know, it's been a mistake on their part to be contracting with an organization that is not the LPHA. And so I had asked Jill if she would communicate that directly to Northwest Colorado Health so that it wasn't us saying, hey, we want to take these contracts away from you, but it was her saying, you know, really these contracts are meant to be managed by the county. And she said that she would be happy to do that, but that she wanted something in writing from us stating that we wished to take those over. I know it's a challenge with Northwest Colorado Health, and I would just remind us that they were told a year ago that this was going to happen. I understand that it's tricky for them, but that was the message to them a year ago, you know, and Moffitt County chose to pull some funding from them, which we didn't. So we're still going to have to navigate through that to make sure that we don't hurt them any more than we need to with this. But it seems pretty clear that we need to be managing those contracts. And then the other thing I would say is I think that the total dollar amount of those contracts is around $700,000. So in terms of the ability to support public health needs, it's pretty significant.
You know, it was interesting in that article that I forwarded to you about Rio Grande County. The interesting takeaway for me was that in little old Rio Grande County, apparently they had a full-time staff of 5 people.
I did see that, and it was framed in that article. I saw that article before you sent it this morning. I was reading it as well. And we have to remember that they have some money that we don't have, but, you know, it was Rio Grande, not Rio Blanco.
Rio Grande, yeah, 11,000.
Whoa. I was thinking it was Rio Blanco. Okay, I misread it. Because what did they say? Their population is like 11,000 people or something like that? Yes.
But you still have to make sure you're measuring apples to apples. Because, you know, they also talked about Scott Kalman's on the phone too. But, you know, I think they were also doing septic inspections and those things that Scott was doing. And so, you know, we don't really know if you add up, you know, and Scott's crew and Carrie's crew. And so I don't know. But anyhow,
it probably does include It probably does include their environmental health staff, because often that's under public health. But still, that would put us basically on par with that. I mean, they're much smaller than we are. So yeah, not that that's the only comparison, but.
Tim, the other, I mentioned two items that we're going to look for an endorsement from the commissioners on going forward. The first, again, as we just talked about, is that that ability for us to take on those Northwest Colorado Health contracts. The second is, you may be aware that over the past several years, that we have been engaged in a grant contract with CDPHE that has facilitated for us what's called the Regional Emergency Preparedness and Response Program. You're maybe also aware that we've had some concerns about the value of this program, and those have been expressed very specifically by Carrie. And so we've had some outreach in the last few weeks with CDPHE staff about the program, and we've expressed our concerns about the issues and the validity and some of the value added that we have gotten from the program, which we don't believe that has been there, especially during our COVID response. So one of the things that has been provided to us as an option is that we would no longer hold that contract on behalf of the other counties. It's a regional contract, and it includes not only Routt County, but Moffitt and Jackson, and also Rio Blanco. So the option is there that we can still participate in the program, but it would be picked up by another county. So what we would do is we'd notify the folks at CDPHE that oversee that program that we no longer want to go ahead and be the manager, the facilitator for that contract, and the individual that is involved with that contract, and instead pass that along to another entity. But then we still, again, have the option of still participating in the program. And with that, I'll ask if there's any questions or any discussion on this item.
So I guess I don't understand. So what was this for, and where did we get it? How did we acquire it?
Do you remember, this is Jim Johnson, Doug. Do you remember July, there was this whole thing? So funny, not funny story. When I talked to Jill, I said, hey, Jill, we have some concerns about how this program operates. And she didn't even know what it was. She was like, What program are you talking about, Beth? And she was like, oh yeah, I guess I know which one that is. And she basically told me that the director of that office, when Jill came on, they didn't like her or something they did. And so the director left, and these people are like floating out here without any real supervision and oversight. And so it's just really odd that one county is employing a regional employee that's serving five counties. But also, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, we're somewhat subsidizing this position because we're paying for his health insurance, are we not?
That's correct, Beth. To it, somewhere in the neighborhood of about $20,000 that we're augmenting in addition to the contract.
Are we collecting any dollars from those other counties for that?
We are not. We are just, again, the facilitator, okay. But it's the money that comes in through CDPHE. And actually, if you follow the money back from the federal government, it actually comes through CDC, which we were surprised to learn. We thought it might've been Homeland Security, it might've been Health and Human Services, but it actually comes through CDC.
So one thing we should do before we get too far down that path is, and I don't know who should do it, but we should check in with the school districts, because that at least in the past, was a focus of Jim Johnson's, was working with the various school districts on their emergency preparedness plans. So
what does that have to do with public health?
Well, it's a great question, but it was, I met Jim Johnson when I was on the school board in South Route, and we worked actually, Jim provided quite a bit of service to all the school districts as they were preparing their school safety and security task force plans. So at least at that time, he apparently felt that that was a very important role for him. And I have no idea if that role has continued, but I'm just saying it might be worth a phone call to the three superintendents to say, hey, is this, are you getting some service that you're relying upon before we choose to move on in a different direction?
The other thing, Tim, though, is I don't think that this discontinues the program or his position. It's just that Rout County will no longer be the fiscal agent for that position and will no longer be subsidizing it to the tune of $20,000 a year.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. We could do that all on our own. That'd be fun.
Yeah, no. And again, the other concept of this is, too, you know, and I don't know why it fit into CDPA or why we got the money into public health and the rest, because it, you know, it seems like it's an OEM feature and Office of Emergency Management and the rest, the disaster planning and the rest that we all do. And they already have a governmental structure for OEM. And I don't know why they couldn't have that intertwined in with the regional perspectives of that and why that couldn't be realigned into that perspective as well. So I would say.
And Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, there has been next to no participation in our EOC functions from this position during the current pandemic, correct?
Beth, that according to the information conveyed to me by both Carrie and Mo, that is correct.
Now, I did see that Jim was involved with some PPE considerations, including he was going to be conducting fit testing for N95 masks. So there has been at least some participation.
But do you remember when that happened that everybody was like, what is going on? We don't need fit testing. Why are we wasting our time on this? Do you remember that was the conversation when that happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think actually the concern then was that at that time, you have to destroy a mask in order to do the fit test. And right. There was such a limited supply, nobody was comfortable with that.
Well, and I believe like the Steamboat Fire has the ability to do their own fit testing. Like there just wasn't a need for somebody else to come and do it.
Well, it's clear that whole situation needs to be reviewed as part and parcel of this overall look at public health, for sure.
So who's going to undertake the, Mark, are you undertaking that part of the discussion? And maybe you and Mo, and I don't know. So you, Mo, and Carrie, I don't know. I hate to, at the same point in time, $20,000, I hate to leave the program in a lurch other than we tell the people that are sending us the money for the rest of it that, you know, we're done and, you know, we're going to give you a deadline and here's where we're at. So
Doug, we Carrie and I had a conversation over a week ago with the CDPHE officials down in Denver and alerted them to the fact that we were going to have this conversation with the commissioners. We had concerns about the value added from this program and what our options were going forward. One of the things that is important to alert you to is that we believe that the sunset for this contract is actually July 1st. So I know we've got a short timeline, but at the same time, they've been alerted to the fact that we seem to have an interest in not being the fiscal agent going forward. And we were going to have this conversation with the commissioners, but just to start those wheels in motion in terms of this particular initiative. So as important as anything else this morning, it was to put it on your radar screen, have this good conversation and see what maybe early on, what your feedback is to Carrie and I in terms of carrying on those conversations.
Carry on those conversations.
Agreed. I'm great with you cutting that loose. Let it be somebody else's problem.
Yep.
We'll return to you, commissioners, either later this week or early part of next week with a final recommendation to you, but I'm pleased and gratified that we could have this conversation this morning. I'm now aware that you've got some good background on the program. We'll do a little more outreach, Tim, at your request on the school districts, just to be double sure and provide any other additional information that you may need. Commissioners, the only other thing is, you noticed at the very top of my notes, I'll be involved in some very important personnel matters, which you're going to talk about a little bit later this morning. So just know that that's going to occupy a good deal of my time coming up, but that's the nature of the business. And with that, I'm happy to answer any of the questions you may have or any updates that you may need.
Just wanted to confirm, we're getting Carrie on the agenda for a discussion on her CARES Act and personnel stuff ASAP, right? She's so overloaded right now. If we could just take care of that for her, rather than expect her to initiate.
All right. Are we ready to move on to our session with Eric?
I'm good.
Okay, Eric, are you on the line?
Yes.
And are you, should I just go ahead and make this motion to go into executive session right now, or do you have any comments before I make that motion?
On other matters, I don't know if you wanted to have a discussion about the bill concerning property tax and interest.
Sure, let's go ahead and do that first and get it out of the way.
Yes, we do.
Okay, well,
yes, please.
So I've been in conversations with Lane, and she's provided me with some numbers wherein we're pretty much at a steady collection pace for as to normal years. And so this may be a problem that we don't have here in Round County. And it appears as much. I also talked with Sternat about it. I don't know. I seem to recall 2, maybe even 3 weeks ago, we've had a discussion about this bill when it was still in pretty rough draft form. There was a lot of language in there that was extremely confusing that they took out of the bill. It's pretty straightforward now, basically giving the treasurer and the board the authority to waive or not collect interest on late property tax payments. And it is opt-in only, so you can not do anything and everything will stay the same, or you can choose to opt in. So Lane was favoring just leaning on what the board wanted to do here. She didn't favor reducing the interest to zero just because of potential investments that are out there and how those folks would be impacted by such a waiver. But again, our numbers indicate that our collections are even as to any other normal year.
So I have a question. I was obviously sensing the urgency that we needed to do something right away. My question is, couldn't we delay doing anything about this for enough time until we fully understood the impacts of what we're doing and make any waiver of interest be retroactive to June 15th?
Retroactive, I would want to put some more thought into that. I did see that in the email. Lane and I talked about it. I'm not sure we landed anywhere where that is concerned. You can't rush because there's a requirement that the consideration go to local taxing authorities first. Kind of a chicken and egg problem, right?
Yeah, so this is Doug. So, I guess we've had kind of these discussions and I appreciate. So did we get a recommendation out of the treasurer? I mean, did Lane, Treasurer Eichelvetter want to have any position? And again, I would absolutely wouldn't want to have interest go to zero. And I mean, and you know, it should be at least as what we would be getting, or what the any entities would be getting out of CSAFE or Colorado Trust. And you know, and it kills me on this last minute decision item. You know, we just love when these things come through and rush us down to the last minute. And it isn't the treasurer's fault. You know, we kind of got this stuff. It isn't our fault. And we get this stuff, and then all of a sudden we need to make a decision. And so, yeah, I'm want to be supporting the our businesses out there. But I made the comment during our last discussion on this. These are last year's taxes. They should have been setting money aside during last year. They're for 2019 taxes, and they should have been setting aside money during 2019, just like a lot, most people, some people do anyhow. And then so that it's due and payable, you know, back to the following year for the 2019 taxes, which would be due in 2020. The other thing that really killed me on this thing, so we grant this thing if it was to be granted, and then we send off the notice to these other taxing entities for us, for them to agree or not agree, and so how we differentiate that, and we still make an arbitrary decision of whether we're going to adopt it. And then after the fact, it seemed like my reading of the bill is after the fact, the taxing entity and can come in and say, hey, I really needed that money now. And so then we, the county, would take it out of our money to backfill this thing. So Eric, you can correct me on any of those things, but I'm just, so I was all right kind of walking away from this thing and saying, yeah, we're all right. And, you know, everybody, we're all hurting, man. So we're all hurting.
So I should have probably led with this. I think to Tim's point, and there's an educational piece still to be had, and maybe the best course of action would be to go ahead and schedule an agenda item for Lane to come in. Why don't I talk to her and ask her to get that on the agenda? There was a rush to do something today, and I don't think there is a rush to do something today. In looking at the bill's history, it doesn't even indicate that the governor has signed it yet. Now I understand from Facebook that he has, but it's not even on their website. I'll talk to Lane and ask her to get it scheduled.
I guess one question, when would tax payments for June 15th actually be considered late? Because there's no need to waive any interest till after. It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think, Eric, while you were talking, there was three commissioners that were doing a lot of head nodding as you were talking about taking our time and making sure that we investigate this and understand the ramifications. So I think there's consensus here that we're not doing anything today, and we're probably not doing anything tomorrow. And I think that's a great idea to get Lane on the agenda, bring forward all the information, give us some time to consider this in the normal course of events.
I guess I'm a little confused because Lane's email said she wanted to talk about it first thing Monday morning, but then if she's recommending no action, I'm not clear where her sense of urgency was coming from. Am I missing something?
Well, it's confusing, right? Because of the June 15th trigger date, that doesn't necessarily mean the resolution has to be done today.
Okay.
And there were a couple versions of the bill that were extremely confusing, and it got cleaned up sort of last minute and then passed last Friday. So there was this feeling of need to rush, but we've got other necessary steps to take anyway. So it's not going to happen by end of business today. So we'll shoot for, I don't have all of your agendas open. Is there a day that you would prefer over any others?
Whenever we have time is my preference.
It all runs together. Whatever Lane and you can both attend, and Deanna and Kendra says okay to put on our agenda, I'm fine with it.
Okay, that's all I had prior to the executive session.
Great. And then you don't have any particular comments about the executive session. I'm just going to go ahead and make the motion and we'll go from there, correct?
just do it pursuant to the cheat sheet that you have, please.
Yeah. Very good. I, acting as chair, move that the Board of County Commissioners go into executive session to discuss or to receive legal advice regarding employee grievance and potential litigation related to a personnel matter. This executive session is not being electronically recorded, as the county attorney has advised that the discussion is subject to attorney-client privilege. This is an executive session for the following purpose: for a conference with the county attorney for the purpose of receiving legal advice on specific legal questions under CRS section 24-6-402-4B. I caution that each participant to confine all discussion to the stated purpose of the executive session, and that no formal action may occur in the executive session. If at any point in the executive session, any participant believes the discussion is going outside the proper scope of the executive session, please interrupt the discussion and make an objection. It is June 15th, and the time is 11:28 a.m.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say go ahead, please.
I would like to add in discussion of the purpose of the executive session is as detailed on the agenda, a discussion of a notice of employee grievance.
Yeah, I think I did. I think I said that, so.
And I apologize for missing.
Did we note who's going to attend the executive session? I assume the three commissioners, county manager, and the legal staff.
Actually, the county manager is not going to attend this.
Okay.
So it will, the participants will be the Board of County Commissioners and our legal staff. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And I believe that Kendra emailed us all a link for the executive session.
I have it.
And Kendra, we're just going to exit this and then come back when we're done, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so I will leave this meeting and be back later. So I see that Doug is present, but I don't, oh, there he is, great. Okay. The time is now 11:42 a.m. and the executive session has been concluded. The following persons were present at this executive session: the Board of County Commissioners and legal staff. The board limited its discussion to the purpose stated in the motion to go into executive session, and no formal action was taken. Eric, I would invite you to help us formulate a motion in terms of appointing a chairperson for the grievance committee.
First, can you tell me the end time again? I'm sorry, I missed that.
11:42 a.m.
Okay. Yes, the county has received a notice of an employee grievance. Per policy, the Board of County Commissioners appoints one representative to the grievance board, and that person shall act as the chair. We've discussed potential employees to fill that role. I've made a suggestion to the board, and so I'd ask the board to make a motion to appoint Robert Filinczak. I'm sorry, something's breaking in. Okay. Make a motion to appoint Robert Filinczak to fulfill the commissioner's representative on the grievance board.
I'll move that motion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you, Eric. Do we have, what time is Dan scheduled to join us for the budget discussion, Kendra?
Noon.
So we've got 15 minutes to kill. What do you guys want to do? Do you want to eat lunch? Do you want to discuss something? What do you want to do?
Well, we have a pretty packed agenda today. Could we just see if Dan can join us a little bit early?
that would be good. Kendra?
Yep, we have a lot to do.
Kendra, why don't you go ahead and get a hold of Dan and see if he can't join us a little bit early. In the meantime, I'm going to start eating my lunch. I hope you guys don't mind.
Enjoy.
I'll turn off my video, but I'm here.
You know, these home meetings, you know, we're saving a hell of a lot on gas and getting to them, but we're having to cook a lot more, man. We have to eat ourselves here. Have to cook my cooking, too.
Dan will be able to join in just a few minutes.
Yeah, we're going through a lot of food at my house because all three of us are here all the time for all the meals.
And that food's available all the time.
Right.
Literally 5 steps away from my desk.
Absolutely.
And a lifetime away from recreation and outside moving around, yeah.
I have been walking my dog a lot more because I can squeeze in a walk in between meetings, which I don't usually do when I'm in the office.
Well, it was a kind of a bummer. I had my day off yesterday. I was going to go spray some weeds. Okay. So I've got my tractor. We're all set. Got my stuff all ready to go and everything. And then that wind came up and, well, heck, you can't spray anything with the winds blowing 25 miles an hour. So yeah, I sat around the house today, yesterday too. It's just like, gosh darn it, come on.
In regards to the food, that box of Girl Scout cookies that's been sitting on Doug's desk for way too long.
Every time
I'm having a temptation.
Snag those, Doug. You got to take those things home.
No. Kendra, why don't you just get them, and I don't need them. They won't do anything for my fabulous looks. They're not going to help it at all.
I was going to say, there's a risk that you might come in to pick them up and the box is just going to be empty.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. Well, you know, if somebody doesn't eat them, the mice, you know, especially nobody being around there that much. I mean, we've had mice in my office. So they had some of those little chocolate teardrops, you know, and so I had a couple of those things in my office drawer. And so, yeah, they came in and made themselves available to them. So,
well, I find it interesting that most people call those things kisses and you call it a teardrop.
What did you call it? A kiss?
They're kisses.
Kisses, okay. Okay.
What would Freud say?
I don't know. Well, it depends on whether you're happy or sad, I guess. Huh? Yeah.
By the way, Lane is on to talk to you tomorrow at 1:40.
I did get some takeout this on Saturday night at the new pizza place in Oak Creek, which is I think it's called the Franciosi Brothers Italian pizza joint. And it's actually, interestingly, it's in the same building that Dinty Moore's pizza used to be in, and has had a couple of other iterations, but I can tell you it was pretty good pizza.
What it was, yeah, I think I know them. So I don't know if you know Marin. Her last name used to be McCutcheon. She worked for the Chamber and now she works for the resort. And I'm pretty sure that's probably her husband because I think they live in Oak Creek. I think he was somehow involved with the pot shop or the grill operation there as well. So that seems like a good business partnership, you know, sell weed and food, right?
Is she pregnant?
I think she is. I haven't seen her in quite a while, but I do think she is pregnant.
Yeah, I mean, the young woman I spoke to that was at the front desk and seemed like she was definitely part of the business was definitely pregnant. But
yeah, she also invited me to like their page on Facebook, so I do think that must be her husband.
Yeah, she is pregnant. She's on our JIC calls every week, and she's due this week.
Oh,
yeah. Great time to open a restaurant.
Yeah.
With a brand new baby.
But I think their first night was Friday night, and the demand was so heavy, they ran out of pizza dough by like 7 p.m.
That's great, Tim. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, and then they were extremely busy. And I picked it up early. It was like 5:30 and it was already jamming. So it was really exciting to see them, you know, open under these circumstances and still have a bunch of customers. It was great.
I would have loved that. We always had to get pizza from Kate's Cafe, which was fine, mm-hmm. but it was, you know, it's not exactly a pizza place.
No, it was very good. All right. I see that Mr. Strnad has joined us. Dan, if you want to unmute yourself and you know, Dan, you could turn on your video. We'd love to see you if you'd like to, but
I don't have video on this particular computer. That's why you don't see me.
Well, we'll just we'll get by with your voice.
Okay.
And my guess is that we're going to be more interested in your spreadsheets than in your face.
I hope so. I'm going to share this.
Go ahead. Get started.
Okay. Okay, how I'm going to start off is just to give you kind of like a what happened with a little bit with 2019 and how it ended up and that kind of thing. Hopefully you're looking at a 2019 actual versus 2019 projected committed reserves.
Yep, that's what we're saying.
Okay, good. So what we got out there is typically we see very little variance with the general fund. That's because of our committed reserve policy, and that we're, you know, basically moved that $1.273 million from where you had it to meet the committed reserve fund balance to the facility management pool. And that, and you can see that down here where you've got the $1.34 million. And that's what a bulk of that is when we move that and we accomplish the committed reserve balance. So that's what happened there. The rest of these, road and bridge, human services, communications, relatively small variances as far as the committed reserves are concerned. Again, the same thing with the communications pool, information systems pool. Heavy equipment pool, what happened there, that $421,000 decrease, that was the plow trucks were not included in the projected budget, and they were purchased. So they, as from the prior year, they were not included in the projected budget. So that's why that you saw that decrease there. And the motor pool had a small decrease there, and I described what happened in the facility management pool. So overall, in the governmental activities before the health insurance pool, we saw about a $1.1 million increase in our reserves from where we ended the budget or when we adopted the budget, and to where we actually ended up with actual. And then the health insurance, we saw an additional $500,000 favorable variance. That was a result of basically we were using the Hayes's projections, which is over a 24-month period. And what happened there is that we still were seeing very favorable outcomes through the end of the year out there that were much more favorable than the what Hayes was projecting, because we had part of 2018 in there, which is a very high claim year, and 2019 was not nearly as high a claim year. It was very much more favorable. So for overall governmental, we're looking at about a $1.6 million favorable variance.
Dan, can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
On the facility management pool, that actual dollar amount of $3 million, is that the dollar amount that's been isolated, in, at least in our thinking, for the human services building?
No, just that $1.237 million, that was put in there. The rest of that is for the pool in itself proper to function. So, but we did move that $1.237 million in there. And then we've got
You lost me on the $1.23 million. Where's that at?
It is in the facility management pool. And that was our favorable variance that we derived from the basically a general fund committed reserve balance. And that got moved into the facility management pool, because typically we put that into the, or historically, however you want to call that, we put it in the road and bridge, but that's not where we're looking to put that right now. So we moved that $1.237 million from the favorable variance into the facility management pool, so we can get at that money a little easier for the DHS building. And then, you know, in the 20, we also did, in the 2020 budget, we also did, and what I've got a sheet on that too, is like what that looks like. But we had like $2.4 million coming out of the health insurance pool. Plus, we also have this $500,000 that's available from as a favorable variance that's coming out of the health insurance pool out there. And then we have the other two amounts that were from severance tax and use tax. And we'll talk about those a little bit here when we look at what were our projections for the 2021 budget and what we think might happen out there.
Thank
but
you.
Did that make sense?
Yeah, mostly, yes. Mostly? Enough for now.
For right now? Okay. Yeah. And then we've got YVRA, going back down here to business activities. We've got YVRA, we saw about a $400,000 favorable variance. And then we have a few other smaller ones with P. Berg, Milner, and Building. I have not heard anything on the from Kevin yet as far as the COVID monies that we could potentially get for paying off the debt in YVRA. So the only thing that I will bring up, this is relatively small, this Milner one, this had this negative fund balance that we, or negative reserve balance that we looked at here, 16%. That's it's $10,000, has to do with trees. That's a little worrisome. If we keep doing these trees like that, we only have about $54,000 left in the Miller budget, and that if that continues to happen year after year, we won't, you know, it won't take long before we use that up. I don't want to spend much time on that, but I just wanted to bring that up. You guys are probably already aware of that. So next thing I've got here, I've got the governmental activity reserve actual to projected budget variance. This is historical. This is that this after we've this is when we actually, you know, after we shut, we after we've done the budget, adopted the budget, and what kind of reserve balances that we've looked at that were being generated over time out there. So you can kind of see it bounces around quite a bit, and back here where we were dealing with the recession, it was quite a bit smaller. And I anticipate that probably happening in the future here, but luckily we had quite a large increase here that we got to look at for as far as governmental activity reserve actual to projected budget variance. So business activity reserve actual to projected budget variances, we're having a trend line here that's actually with the percentage, it's going down quite close to zero, and also with the dollar amount, which is close to zero also. So that's kind of a good sign that we're actually budgeting quite close once we get out there and we know what we're looking at to a certain extent, at least 3 or 4 months prior to year end. And then here's our major governmental activities revenues that we looked at. And we had, you know, sales tax is probably the big one out here. It is a big one. We saw an 18% increase. Idea there is, you know, a big part of that, we had a strong economy. The other thing is that Wayfair, the sales tax, the internet sales tax, that came into effect at the halfway through the year in beginning of July. And, you know, some of the bigger numbers in there are definitely the, at least last year. Last year was definitely the Airbnb type entities and that kind of thing. And to a certain extent, like Amazon's, eBay, that kind of stuff also contribute, but not nearly as much as Airbnbs. And then HUTF, basically that had to deal with where we saw that positive variance, that had to deal with Senate Bill 18001 and Senate Bill 19262. We did not budget for those. We didn't know whether or not those were actually happening or not. And so that's where you're seeing the increase there fundamentally. And then we saw a slight increase just from the economy, people driving cars more and stuff like that. And then building use tax. The increase we see there was budget conservative on that, 235,000 versus the actual that we saw at 850. And that we changed where we actually have the capital committed reserve balance in 2020. And so we set up that reserve out there, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in the future.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah.
Let me interrupt again. I want to back up to the statement you just made about sales tax. Mm-hmm. So we're only collecting 1% sales tax on Airbnb rentals, correct?
Yeah.
And you're asserting that the largest part of that $1.1 million of increased sales tax revenue at 1% comes from Airbnbs and not from online sales?
I don't know about the whole 1.1 million, but as far as the Wayfair kind of idea, the 1.1 is that, you know, we had a very good, there was a lot of people show up last year, I feel, and that kind of thing. But when I looked at April this year for what helped us out with the positive variance that we had in April of 2020, actually Airbnb represented almost $54,000, and then other internet sales was like Amazon, eBay, that kind of stuff was like at $38,000 for one month.
I'm just looking at a number like 1.1 million. If that was, let's just say that entire difference was created by Airbnb rentals, then that would be $100 million.
Yeah, that didn't all come from Airbnb. Because what I'm saying there is we had a really strong year. I'd have to go back and look to see what internet sales generated for us for the last 6 months of the year, and then also what Airbnb. But I mean, we also had a really strong year too. So I mean, it's not all internet sales. But when we do look at internet sales, Airbnb was the largest part of it. That type of sale. And then the internet sales were the second part, and everything else kind of like out there.
Okay, thanks.
Specific ownership tax, auto use tax, both those are little bit car sales. It looks like, you know, we didn't buy as many cars and stuff like that last year as we did as what we anticipated with the budget and that kind of thing. And then we have clerk fees that were, you know, strong real estate market again out there. And I think that's going on into this year and it could continue. Treasury fees, that was conservative budgeting as far as the $500,000 is concerned. And then I think we got a better idea when we actually looked at actual to find out what that 560 was. And I think we're going to be very close to that 560 this year. Motor vehicle fees, a little bit of an increase there. Again, that's where, you know, basically people have been buying cars and that kind of stuff, but this shows up where the, you know, when their licenses over time and that kind of stuff. So we're still seeing a result from positive vehicle purchase from prior years and that kind of thing. Severance tax, we budgeted very conservatively in 2019 with the $45,000, and we saw a $724,000 actual for a $680,000 favorable variance in severance tax. A big portion of that is we got, you know, the litigation had ended, and then also we had normal price per barrel of oil and that kind of thing that goes on out there. So that's why that went up. And then E911 saw a little bit of a decrease there. That's kind of a stable number. It fluctuates a little bit, and that's kind of staying there right around that $450,000 mark. And then interest, we saw a great increase there that we have to thank the treasurer for actually investing funds, which is a grand thing. And then we also had some positive. We had an increase in interest rates also to a certain extent in 2019. Mineral lease, we saw very little change. In PILT, we saw very little change from what was budgeted, but we saw about a $3.4 million favorable variance from major revenues. And then as far as the trend is concerned, we're seeing somewhere around 6 to 7% out there as far as the dollar variance and percent variance, and it kind of bounces around depending on, you know, like here we're back here in 2010, we're looking at the recession numbers, and as we growed out, went out into the future, we had some more favorable things happen out here, especially in 2019 with Wayfair and then the HUTF idea, and then also the severance tax that's been kind of consistent, but that actually helped us pull some of those numbers up. And then YVRA fee revenue, we've got the trend out here that we're looking at is this line. It's actually two lines, the trend. It's got both the variance and the dollar percent variance, the dollar variance and the percent variance. They just happen to be very close to each other. So we're still looking at about, you know, a 1% or so, something like that on trend, which is very close to what we're looking at over history. And that's good, because we're budgeting pretty much what we anticipate seeing out there. And then the regional building department, again, we had the recession out here back here in 2010. We had a slowdown out here in 2015 to a certain extent, not really a slowdown, but it was a more consistent. And we're still seeing around here with our trend, 10% dollar variance and roughly 10% with our regional building department, our percentage variance out there. This year, this is just our, you know, our personnel variance that we saw. We anticipate, you know, we try to shoot for a 2% goal on budget right here, the $490,000. For all intents and purposes, I believe we met that goal. We were only off of it by $5,700. And most of that, what you look at here, that's all from turnover for the most part. And the same thing here for, that was governmental activities. And then also here we have business activities. We have a favorable variance about $213,000. 5%, but it's still very close to meeting our 2% goal. We're only off about $134,000 right there. Personnel, I'm not going to go through these numbers, but you can look at that however you want to look at that. These are just where those variances are coming from by department. And then we have our trend out here. The dollar variance is actually going up a little bit out here, not substantially. And then our percent variance is actually staying around this 3% number out there, which is, you know, it's really good that we can see that kind of a trend out there and that kind of thing, and that we're budgeting really close to what we anticipate happening out there. And all, like I said before, this has to do with basically favorable, it's turnover for the most part is what's happening out there. And then business activities, here we're seeing somewhere around a 4% variance, and then a little bit higher. It's growing. The dollar variance is going up along with the just the dollars in general. That there's more being spent out there and that kind of thing. But again, this is not, and it's not very bad, or it's really pretty good when you look at a 4% variance on a for the year and that kind of thing. So, and then again, we have operations. Here we have about we looked at almost $1 million or a 6% variance for the governmental activities. Our goal was 343,000. We had about a 4% favorable variance, or 645,000 over that 2%. And a big portion of that is human services. And the reason why that happens like that is we budget based on state statutes that we need to budget based on the allocation and not on what we think is going to take place out there. So some of that's always going to exist out there. And then business activities, we have YVRA is a big chunk of that as far as operations. It's 4%. It's very, very good, I think. And we were only, for the whole business activities area, we saw $111,000, $112,000 favorable variance, and then a goal was $54,000. And so just about a 2% difference out there, relatively small given the dollars we're looking at. Again, this detail, if you got any questions on that, you can contact me, but I'm not going to go through each one of those. And then we have governmental activities, a trend out here. This is actually, we're actually seeing a little, the trend is actually going down, so that we've been higher out there in the past from 10% and that kind of thing. We're seeing a 6% for the last 2 years. That's good, because then we can spend that money on something other than a favorable variance. It's not being spent. We can spend it on something that we need out there. So that's a positive trend. And then the dollar amount is basically about the same. Business activities, we grew out there a lot with our operations variance percent and also dollar variance, but we did very well in 2019, coming down to this $112,000 favorable variance, or 4%. So that's good news that we saw that. And again, for the same reason I stated above. Capital, we saw basically a 20% favorable variance, $2.5 million for governmental activities. Our goal is still the 2%. A lot of this is just, when we look at this kind of thing here, building a plant, this was a CLEP project, that $1.3 million. That was basically more of the CLEP project was completed in 2018 than we anticipated by the time we adopted the budget. And so that created the favorable variance in 2019. And then information systems is an ERP program and of about $280,000 favorable variance. And then the other one was that the land management system, which we had not started yet. So that was pretty much the remainder of that balance out there. But again, we had about $2 million favorable variance over our goal of 2% for governmental activities. And actually the trend, when we get on the next slide, is actually we've improved over history out there. And then we have business activities. YVRA had almost a $4 million favorable variance on capital. That was the delay in the remodel and what have you out there. And then Pittsburgh Water and Sanitation, this is a lagoon. Again, that was a delay in the construction because of prices and that kind of thing. Same thing for YVRA. But we're rolling with at least one of those projects right now with the YVRA remodel. And here we can see governmental activities. We can see, like in the past, we've had some quite large dollar and percent variances, 47, 61, and that kind of thing. We've actually got it down quite a bit here out in the future. Our trend is actually dropping. So you can see where we've been actually in this, 20% range, or 20-30%, which is good. We're always going to have some of that kind of thing happen. So, but this is good to get, again, it's, like we can use this money for something that we need, as opposed to having it show up as a favorable variance. And business activities, this is primarily related to YVRA. It just bounces around quite a bit, just because of when we get federal funding and when we don't get federal funding, when a project goes or does not go. So. But it is over, the trend is actually going down, even though we had a huge one here, but where it went up quite a bit, and hopefully we'll see it mellow out a little bit next year. So, questions on that last year stuff, on the 2019 trend and budget to actuals and anything out there? No questions? I'll keep going then. So here we're going to go into a little bit what we're looking at as far as our revenue trends and what have you out here. And that's, you know, like right now we're, you know, like with, I'm going to start off here with this 4 to 5 month area here. And we're actually, you know, if this was to stay the same right now, we'd be looking at about a $4.8 million increase. A large part of that is property tax. That's not going to exist out there just because, but we, you know, like what's happening in the treasurer's office is that I think the technology there has helped them collect their taxes or get their dollars actually a lot earlier into the month than after the end of the month and that kind of thing. Right now, we're looking at a 2% favorable variance right now in the in property taxes. So we've collected almost all of them, and we'll find out. You know, that's through May. Let's see, what month? Yeah, May. So that's really pretty good out there. And then I think we're going to have the next chunk of it that comes through here in June, and we should be, you know, I think that hopefully that'll be good, that we'll see that people have paid early, and hopefully that that trend will continue with our property tax collection in June. I do not anticipate, when we go into the future out there, I do not anticipate a whole lot of inflation or anything like that. There's still inflation out there, surprisingly, but I don't anticipate that, and I don't think there's going to be a whole lot, you know, like when it comes to the Tabor calculation, which includes inflation and growth from construction. Again, we had, you know, a few months of growth in construction as far as new permits and that kind of stuff, but definitely has tapered off significantly here in June, and we'll see, there'll be something there for construction, but not a whole lot. So if we have like 1 or 2% increase in property tax, I think that'd be a lot. Sales tax? Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Beth.
I just have a question. I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with this. I don't understand, when you say change, percent change or dollar change from what?
Okay, when I say, so like we're in the 2020, 4 to 5 months.
Yeah.
So where we are right there, that is, where we are current, how much we've collected and how fast, it's on a seasonal basis. So this is like either through April or May. So like with property taxes, we're actually looking at our May numbers right now. And what's happened out there is we've collected early. Okay. It's not that we're going to get more money out there. We're probably going to be about the same as we always are. We're going to be around that less than 1% uncollected or something like that. Now I did put a 3% increase in or a 3% decrease in for 2020, and we'll see whether or not that comes to fruition. I don't think it is, but I mean, cause right now as collections, like I said, people are paying their property taxes. And then, so that's where I see, you know, like that negative 3% where we see 2020 as of 4/17, I have that 3% decrease. So that's based on our total property taxes for Rock County, excluding the voter approved property taxes, because this is just kind of like our money that we can actually use out there, as opposed to voter approved property taxes are used for restricted purposes.
Okay. Sorry, Dan, I'm going to stop you for a second. So this is a change from the budgeted amount or a mm-hmm. change from last year or what?
It's a change from the 2020 budget. The 16.85.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know. I just wanted to confirm that I understood what that number was representing. Thank you.
Okay, sorry I went on too long.
It's all good.
Okay.
Dan, my question was, and I think you've answered it, was that negative $522,000? That you're projecting for the year, but hopefully you're being overly pessimistic about that.
Yeah, I think I am. I think people, I think we'll really know, like when we get this June payment in, you know, that we have, actually it's due today, and we'll find out here shortly what that's going to be actually out there, and we can then have a much better idea what's left out there for people, you know, for people to pay. But so far they've done really well with paying their property taxes. So I'm anticipating that maybe they'll continue to do that. And then sales tax, like I mentioned in I think sometime last week, we got our sales tax number. Actually, it was Monday. That was very well. I really was not anticipating seeing that, given it was April. I knew that we'd have some kind of number coming over from March, because we had the state order not to pay, or not to pay their sales tax. They had a month behind. But really, what kind of there was some of that took place out there, and then the other part was actually again our internet sales from Airbnb and other internet sales, where I think I mentioned before previous that to this is that we had $92,000 worth of internet sales, where $54,000 was from Airbnb, and then the remainder internet sales were like for Amazon and what have you out there was approximately $38,000. And we should anticipate again, I think some of that, I mean, at least through the first 6 months of the year, because Wayfair, the internet sales tax legislation, didn't exist for the first half of the year. And we should see some of that. Now, it's not, I don't think it's going to make up the entire, what we're seeing as far as a decrease in the economy out there. I'm sure it's not. But there's a lot of people buying things that, on the internet, just because they can't, go buy things that, wherever they were, go to Denver or something like that or what have you, they stayed at home. So it's going to definitely have a positive impact on us there.
So this, Dan, Tim again, interrupting again, I'm still, I guess I've never really focused on this number before. So if we collected $54,000 in 1 month for Airbnb sales tax, that means that there was $5.4 million of Airbnb rental paid in 1 month in Rout County.
Yeah, that's what, if you divided 54,000 by 0.01.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. You have to remember though that it's not just like I'm renting out the apartment in my garage. Like we have a lot of commercially managed property that is being rented out through Airbnb. I don't know if they collect tax for all of that or not.
Yeah, it's like Expedia, Airbnb, Travelogic, Travel, whatever they're called. It's those kind of entities.
Because I think what I saw the other day is like 70% of our commercial rentals are advertised on Airbnb or something like that.
So that would, Dan, that would include entities like the Sheraton and the Steamboat Grand that are actually timeshares and now might be listed as Airbnbs rather than treated as a traditional lodging property?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that helps.
But really, it's just anyone who's renting through those websites, which is pretty much anything that's not a hotel.
Okay, that helps me understand it. Thank you very much.
So then
of course, that's interestingly, that's a pretty impressive haul during a period when we were outlawing those activities.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of money that was not showing up because of Wayfair did not exist. But I guess it takes time to transition sometimes with the technology and that kind of thing.
But what I'm saying is, will we see the, we had a lodging ban. So presumably, if everybody was observing our lodging ban, there would be no sales tax generated during that time frame.
But then again, okay, what's going on out here is that you had the delay also that took place from the executive order, and that's definitely part of it, what took place out there.
So we could expect to see a significant dip in the May collections, May collections. Because theoretically that wasn't taking place.
That's correct. I would say so. Other than if they just didn't pay their sales tax or something like that, which is impossible. There's that thing going on out there with I know there was one company, I'm not going to say who that was, but there was one of these Airbnb types that did not pay their timely. And so that we might still see some of that yet.
Okay.
But I would say, yes, you're not, you shouldn't, we shouldn't see this $54,000 worth of Airbnb sales tax out there.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, when we go to 2020, basically what we, you know, like we, our COVID budget, we're anticipating a 17% decrease. Like I said, this is a lot better than what we're looking at here with this 1.191 million. But that at some point, you know, we're going to, we need to, you know, kind of, when we think about these numbers out here, I've got kind of like two scenarios. One, you know, with our original our COVID decreases in major governmental revenues. And then I actually increased this sales tax number to 2.1 million just because there's, we got several numbers from other taxing entities and what have you out there. Or not taxing any other counties and that kind of thing. And then, you know, because Eagle County is looking at a 40% decrease. Pitkin's looking at a 65% decrease. Grand is 50%. And then the Ski Corps, you know, that was through, I don't remember what source that was, but, you know, we were looking at a 30% decrease from Ski Corps. So we need to anticipate something like that yet. I mean, that's a ways off yet, but, and it's hard to tell. Where we are with, you know, we got April, but we really don't have any more, you know, what's happening out there during the summer. And, you know, we won't have a, you know, July will be like, you know, basically August, September, we'll see that in September, 2 months later than the month. So what I'm suggesting here is we, you know, like when we present this budget to our department managers, that we have a couple scenarios out there instead of just one, that we, you know, like if it does push closer to the negative 30% for sales tax, and since that's our biggest risk area, I believe, out there, then we have more than one option out there as far as how we're going to deal with that kind of a decrease or what have you out there. Questions on that sales tax number?
No, thank you. That was a good discussion.
I do have a question. So you're essentially saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that you have these two forecasted for 2021 sales tax numbers, and that's kind of a low end, high end of what you would suggest giving to the department heads as far as numbers for revenue.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily low end, high end. I'm just saying that these are two scenarios that if we have to, you know, I got a 0.0 and a 0.1 as far as 2021.0 and 2021.1, and that's kind of gives us a range to work in. So that if we do see things going further south, or we have a resurgence or what have you, want to, you know, that kind of thing that takes place, then maybe, you know, we have a plan in place to deal with that. And
But the 17% decrease is the most optimistic number that you would feel comfortable going forward with for sales tax at this point.
Give me a few more months and I might be much more optimistic, but right now, right now I'm going to land on that 17 just because I don't, you know,
I'm fine with that, Dan. I have a friend vacuuming here. I'm fine with that. I just wanted to make sure that I understood. Thank you.
I still have
the difference between the two scenarios is almost exclusively wrapped up in the sales tax.
Yeah, everything else, I'm kind of like, I feel pretty good about. I mean, as far as like being in a pretty good range, that this sales tax number, though, there's quite a bit of uncertainty around it. I mean, I think there's probably more uncertainty than we've ever had around a revenue forecast here in our history. So,
I want to make sure I understand, Dan, what you're saying. So, and I understand, and the rest of the numbers all make sense, and even the property tax, I mean, really most of that's going to be collectible. It just depends on when and, you know, to process. So the question on the sales tax, so we had originally budgeted for 2020 7.6 million,
mm-hmm.
and then you're suggesting they're dropping that down by 1,191,000 for the refurbished 2020 budget, correct?
Yeah, that was our original. That's based, you know, that 17% decrease, that's based on a 2008 recession number out there.
Okay.
And then you know, the 30% that we're looking at, the 2.1 million, that's given that, you know, when we're looking at Eagle County at a 40% decrease, Pitkin at 65 and Grand at 50, and then Ski Corps at the minus 30, I said, well, okay, let's at least talk about a 30% decrease.
So I guess, and are those counties all, I mean, those counties are more materialistic. They're not a 1% sales tax either. So, I mean, so they have bigger numbers to be affected by versus our number at 1% for the sales tax.
Well, so, dollar wise, yeah, these are just, when I say they're decreases, you know, that's what they experienced or that's what they're anticipating experiencing out there. So, you know, and like I said, the uncertainty, it's going to take a little while to figure out what we're really getting ourselves into here. And then, you know, one side of me says that this could be a V, and then the other one, you know, like when I listen to the feds or whatever, you know, it could be drawn out for, you know, a while yet out in the future here. And it depends a large part too on what the additional stimulus packages are going to be out there from the federal government and that kind of thing. So, uncertainty.
So when are we going to decide which number we're going to plow into that thing? And that is a pretty material thing to be putting into our budget for our governmental services. Basically, the difference between, well, it's $1 million. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what I'm giving, you know, what I anticipate doing is giving, you know, basically you got a range here, you know, like we're saying before we said, you know, we're anticipating a 10% cut, and then we're also looking at a 12% cut. So, I would give them, the department managers, basically, I'd say, like, you know, we need to look at these kind of two scenarios and work accordingly with that. It's coming up with ideas to, to deal with this kind of revenue decrease out there. I don't plan on giving them one idea out there, but I'm, you know, like here, you know, here's the 2021.1.0 for revenues, and then where's the 2021.1. We got to go another 2% or something like that. What is that going to look like? And then the other thing is, like, as we get information throughout the year, we may have to adjust these numbers. They may get better or worse. I mean, like right now we had the great news on sales tax, but you know, we're not doing so well on specific ownership tax, even though we got the executive orders. We're just going to have to, we'll look at these numbers as we go through the year, and we'll plan it. We'll communicate accordingly and see whether or not we have to go farther.
Commissioners, I appreciate Dan's remarks, and he's exactly right that we've got to maintain flexibility as we continue to see the trend lines, and we see what that's doing every month. I think that, quite frankly, that April was a shock to us in terms of where that sales tax landed, and I have anecdotal information from a lot of other counties and a lot of resort communities that the same thing happened for them, and I think what we're seeing is, as we all know, things are opening up a little bit more than we anticipated. We're also seeing, I think, an interesting trend line, and I think we've all observed it firsthand. We have a lot of people who have decided that they're not going to take those long distance trips. They're not going to get on airplanes, but instead they're going to get in their cars and they're going to go ahead and they're going to drive on the weekends to go ahead and enjoy the great outdoors. And as you well know, we're one of the best spots for them to drive to from Metro Denver in the Front Range. We have 3 million potential people that will come up here and recreate in our communities. So I think actually we may have a more favorable sales tax collection point than we really thought, certainly 8 to 10 weeks ago. But again, I think once we start to see something like those, maybe when we finally see a June sales tax report, certainly when we see a July, I think that that's going to be a very strong indices in terms of where we're going to go ahead and determine we're going to wind up for the close of the fiscal year. So again, we've just got to be flexible. We got to be malleable. We've got to stay very close and tuned up to what we're getting as far as monthly numbers. But the trend line is certainly better than it was a couple months ago, commissioners. And I think that's the good news.
I'd also, just my two cents, I would just weigh in, suggest that compared to some of those other places, Pitkin or Eagle, we a smaller percentage of our economy is reliant on tourists. I know if you look at like Breckenridge, it's at 80% or something. I've seen these numbers before. And so when you're under this stay at home, I mean, this is just me totally speculating, but it's a time of year, you know, mud season where people usually would get out of town and maybe not be spending a lot of money. And instead they were at home and they were maybe ordering things online or buying things in Route County. I think there's a real possibility that we just have a lower reliance on tourism than some of those other counties. And so we were more, you know, it's the locals spending money during that time that helped keep our sales tax strong.
So, you bring that up, and I'm recalling now a number of conversations with Scott Ford when he used to talk about the fallacy that raising sales taxes was making people that visit pay our bills for us, that the majority of the sales taxes generated is generated by residents. Hmm.
So where is the city heading with their sales tax number? We're talking about them being, I mean, that's where the majority of our sales tax comes from as well. And I thought they were projecting something like, you know, a big number down as well. And so that is a big number for us too, whether it's 1% versus 4.5%, whatever. So,
you know, the only number I've got, I have not talked to Kim as far as like where she is with her 2021 budget, but you know, like when this starting out the COVID, she was a little over, I think it was like 21% is what she was looking at as far as this, the original decrease in sales tax for 2020. But I have not talked to her about what's going on in the 2021 budget yet.
So, and again, this is all good conversation. And again, if, as we work to kind of keep it at a high level here discussion. But so again, I'm thinking out loud here to myself, do we plan for the worst and hope for the best, or do we plan for the best and prepare to adjust for the worst? And so, you know, and again, these other numbers, heck, severance tax, we already knew, heck, that we bumped that up so we could put some more money into the capital improvement fund anyhow in the first place. So that thing really isn't that big of a deal. And we talk about, you know, specific ownership tax might be a bigger deal, but you know, the big grill in the room is the sales tax number. And I guess we ought to, I don't know when we're going to decide what that number should be, or are we going to make a number now? And again, I guess I'm talking because I'm thinking here, because I know when I saw the minutes from the department head meeting, there was some ask, well, whether the commissioners were going to, you know, talk about, you know, furlough or adjustments to the salary structure. We know salaries end up being 80% of our expenditures for the most part too. So again, I guess I'm just trying to, we're having a high level conversation here right now, a little bit in my mind. I want to have that anyhow.
So I would jump in on that, Doug. So in terms of talking about 2020, and I, again, speaking for myself only, I feel like the reductions that we made in capital expenditures has more or less precluded the necessity in 2020 of engaging in employee furloughs or wage reductions.
So I don't know that I would agree with that. We just kicked the can down the road and just said, well, we're not going to do it this year, but it's not gone away. We still have to do it. And I'm just being devil's advocate either.
I think this is, this is a great time to have this discussion, or at least have a preliminary discussion around it. And that's why I threw that out there, that I kind of felt like we were in a position where we were okay for 2020 in terms of salaries and employees' compensation. But you're right, that's not a decision that we've made, and that is a decision that has yet to be made and needs to be talked about.
Yep, no, I agree, it needs to be talked about, because again, those paving jobs, the, you know, all those stuff that we kick the can down the road, we know that those things will need to happen. And so it's just like when you're talking about reducing water use, you have to do something that really makes a difference in reducing water. You just don't get to irrigate. I mean, you can't just say, well, I'm not going to irrigate that field that this week, because then we'll have more water. Well, of course we will. We'll have more water. We'll have more money because we're not spending money out here on those things that we really need to do. So, again, I just want to make sure that we have that sustainable conversation and that we're talking about and just being open and real about it for us as well as our employees about, you know, how we create a sustainable budget that kicks us 2 years down. And I guess we can recover if things start recovering after we've done something or didn't do something. We'll know then. It's like COVID all the way around. Every day we know, it's another day we know better than we knew it yesterday. So it's like, so I don't know. I'm just trying to think out loud here a little bit and make sure we have a sustainable situation going forward as well.
Well, we had talked about by the end of June, trying to make some kind of a decision about the 2020 budget, especially if we were going to consider a reduction in employee compensation. There's no point in trying to do that in September or October, so close to the end of the year. If you're going to create meaningful savings, you probably want to do it starting on July 1st. That's kind of an arbitrary thing, but that is what we talked about.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Again, it's painful, but at the same point in time, you know, I feel very good that we still have all of our employees working, and we had them through the furlough and the rest, and we had them, and we haven't had any impacts on it. And we know that our rest of our citizens are out there, and you know, and tons of them out of jobs and businesses closed down and the rest. And I don't know, I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth too. So, you know.
Well, no, I mean, you know, yeah, there's that element of equity between the private sector and the public sector. But then there's also that question of which services are we willing to suspend if we're going to go in that direction? Or are you willing to just simply impose a reduction in wages on your staff and still expect to deliver the same set of services? Tough questions.
Commissioners, you're exactly right that we had identified July 1st as an examination date for it, where we stand relative to personnel for the balance of fiscal year 20. What Dan and I would like to do is assemble some information that I believe would give us some indices going forward and look, you know, a little future window in terms of where we're going to see for the balance of fiscal year 20, in terms of where we're going to land, and then provide a recommendation to you, the commissioners, have a very important dialogue and discussion, and then move forward from there. But again, just trying to give ourselves enough time that we get enough information to make the basis of what I think is a very important decision and some good judgment on everybody's part.
That makes way too much sense, Mark.
So I, sorry that I stepped away for a minute. I was making Clark lunch, but I was listening to everything you guys were saying. And I think it makes sense. You know, we had set July 1 but I think in Doug's original question was about the which number we were going to use for projections for 2021. And I thought I understood Dan to say that he wanted to kind of give the department heads both numbers and then really work with them on strategies to make cuts, because they're going to have to make cuts either way. And that this is sort of the first iteration is that range. And I think that makes sense. Because exactly what you said, Doug, there's so many unknowns in this whole thing. I mean, between when we start the budget process and when we adopt our final budget, we're going to have a lot of new information about what may happen going forward. And so we'll probably have to make more adjustments than we're used to in the budget process.
Yeah, and I don't want to jump to conclusions here either. And I appreciate our employees and the work we're doing with them as well. I don't want to arbitrarily, well, we think it's going to be, so we're going to do this automatically and jump to the gun here. And you know, I'd assume, make sure we got, July 1st is great with me. I just want to make sure that we keep in mind, you know, really what our options are, and what we did in March or April was not really sustainable. It wasn't really, just because didn't put any gas in the car, it doesn't mean I didn't get, I still need to go drive so somewhere. Anyhow.
You know, one trigger I would say, though, is like if that, you know, the YVRA can't pay off that loan, we may want to talk then, that kind of thing. And then, you know, or whether or not we could, you know, YVRA could still pay off that loan with the reserves that they got. I mean, that's definitely, I think, one trigger to, you know, start a little bit of a conversation on and that kind of thing. So
my only problem with that, Dan, is that's talking about really reserves. It's not really talking about revenues versus expenses. And so I understand. And so I guess, you know, it does make a difference if they paid off that balance. It would be able to fund our capital needs in the general fund. But I mean, I'm still looking at trying to figure out how we get, you know, sustainable revenue versus expenditures. So taking out the capital or whatever.
Absolutely. You know, that's where I'm saying, you know, absolutely what you're saying, Doug, I agree with it. It isn't sustainable, but it did definitely help us with our 2020 cash flow, if you will. Okay. So it's a one-time hit, but it's a big one-time hit. And if we get it, it's a good thing. But if we don't get it, then I think we need to look again. We need to look at that if it doesn't happen in the bigger picture of things here and stuff like that. And that I'm thinking that we're going to know about that maybe shortly, within, you know, a month or so, something like that, I hope, anyhow.
Hey, Dan, this is Tim. The last, when we were, well, we already did make the decision, in fact, to postpone a big chunk of our capital expenses. And what was roughly that dollar amount of those capital expenses that we postponed?
It was like almost $5 million in the governmental activities area.
Okay, thank you.
So,
at one time, Dan, back when we were having that conversation, I kind of recall that the ballpark number that we were kicking around was in shortfall of revenues was right in that same range.
Was 3.8 million in total, but we've got, you know, like some of the things that we, you know, like here I'm going down this list. We got this interfund loan here at $978,000, and then we got the COVID relief fund. I know this number is, what do you want to call it, hot. It's got more, because we're going to have some expenses that go along with it. It's not just going to be unbudgeted, because the unbudgeted ones, anything that we put against the COVID relief fund that's unbudgeted is really almost, quote unquote, like a new revenue source and that kind of thing. But
that would push us right back up over 3 million right away if that number wasn't there.
Oh yeah, you'd be at the, yeah, if you add up these numbers like here, all these red ones, that's a 3.8 million.
Yeah.
So that's okay. So what we're saying, though, is what, you know, we did some positive things to get ourselves in a good cash flow situation. Now when we look at the budget going into, you know, we're also going to, you know, we'll look at 2020, but we'll also go, you know, like with that graph, the all fund balance summary graph that we look at when we actually, you know, do our budget, we're going to be looking at several years into the future, and we're going to see what does that look like out there for us. And we'll also have, it's going to be very uncertain again, but we'll have an idea about, you know, whether, you know, like given the assumptions that we make, when we may go negative or that kind of thing out there. So I think we can make, you know, like once we get the numbers into the 2021 budget, we can get a better picture for you guys to look at and hopefully make better decisions given the information that we've got.
Hey, Dan, what's that bottom line number, the 417.20 revenue? What is that?
417.
Right underneath the COVID relief fund, 55%. Yeah, that 209.
Oh, this 209.
Yeah, what is
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. All right. I heard a whole different number.
Not the traditional definition of bottom line, Tim.
I'm sorry. The lowest line above the bottom line.
Okay. No, that's okay. I'm where you are now. Basically, that was okay. The differences in revenue, and I know some of those aren't going to all be coming forward in the future years, but this was when we did our supplemental budget. We saw basically a decrease of $210,000 decrease in revenues out there. From other than these major revenues that came through the supplemental budget process. So that, there's several different ideas in there. So that's like 100,000 of that is like the grant that we had for the master plan and that kind of thing. That's probably not going to continue on in the future, but it's a flavor thing.
It's a miscellaneous. I get it. That's
yeah. And try to capture some of those revenues that aren't major that okay. we had out there. So highway, let's see, are we good? I'll go back up to this highway user tax fund.
Sure.
Okay. Yep. All right. So highway users tax, we're running, that's definitely showing the picture of how many, how people are driving or not driving. And, we're seeing definitely a decrease in the highway user tax fund because people aren't driving as near as much. Now that might change here in June and that kind of thing, but I'm thinking that number is going to be quite, it's going to go down a lot in May out here, because I think that was probably our biggest, month of doing nothing out there and stuff like that, if you will. So, but anyhow, I'm still sticking to the 21% decrease, just given what we've known through April so far. And, those numbers are still in there. And then we'll see again once we get into June and July, hopefully we'll see some of those numbers tick back up a little bit, and we'll see whether or not we, it's still going to be in that 21% range or not out there. But that's where I'm at right now with that number, given the information I've got. PILT and federal mineral lease funds, I was kind of, except for some timing differences happened together with each other. I did call the feds, was that Thursday or Friday, one of those days. And that distribution, it's going to be out at the end of this month. And basically they funded everything except they funded everything. They just got a small decrease in there for their administrative fees. So we should see basically pretty dang close to what we budgeted for as far as PILT. And then federal mineral lease funds, that depends on whether or not 20 Mile is mining through federal property or not. And federal mineral lease is only represented about $40,000 of that whole PILT number out there. Now, the other thing that we've got, how we budgeted PILT in the past is that we would budget for the current year for, say, like the 2020 budget. That was like at 100%. But then when we went into 2021, that we only budgeted at 65% of the budget. And that represents about a $640,000, and I put that in there, that $641,000. So there's another flavor thing that the board can consider is whether or not that, we've gone approximately 10 years not having a having the federal government not appropriate for the PILT program and that kind of thing out there. So I'm thinking, if it makes it through this year and we don't hear anything about it next year or anything like that, I think that might be it's a potential $600,000 revenue going on out in the future, not in 2020, but in 21 and in the future out there in 2022, that kind of thing. So there's a nice chunk of change, let's put it that way, that we can look at there. It's an option. I think our risk has gone down significantly, but we'll talk about that some more in the future here about that number, but there is about $600,000 there for that. The specific ownership tax, I think I was going to talk about specific ownership tax, auto use tax, and motor vehicle fees. I got $126,000 there for specific ownership tax, and then auto use tax, we're looking at $183,000 there. And then motor vehicle fees, we're looking at about $45,000. All three of those are very hard numbers to do anything with right now. the numbers right now that I have are based on the 2008 recession. And, you know, we received, you know, the executive orders that you don't have to pay those, basically, you know, when you buy your license and stuff like that. So until we get, you know, past those executive orders a little bit, then we're going to start seeing. But I have seen, like, in the halfway through this month, you know, I kind of anticipated seeing like maybe 50% collection on that. So we're right about budget on some of these numbers out here, which is a good sign, because I think, you know, the other 2 months, they definitely weren't, people weren't paying and stuff like that. There is one of the consumer confidence indexes that came out, definitely shows people want to buy cars. Now, we haven't quite seen that yet, but there's some great deals out there, and hopefully, you know, that might spur them into actually buying the car, and then we could see the auto use tax or what have you out there, and then also the same thing that goes along with the motor vehicle fees, and then specific ownership tax if that actually starts kicking in out there. But right now, it's very, given the data I've got, I'm sticking to where I'm at out there until I find something out different that's going to take place there. So, interest revenue, you know, we're looking at we're a little bit ahead right now, that 3% right now, seasonality wise, but we're looking at over the year, we're looking at a 27% decrease. Again, this is, thanks Lane for where you invested your money out there. We should, you know, about half of our portfolio is tied up in some pretty good interest rates of like 2% or better out there. And that's going to last for about almost a year and 10 months approximately. So that'll cover most of next year. So this is basically where the Fed funds rate went down to like 0.10%. We're not going to get a whole lot of interest on the half of our portfolio. So that's where we're sitting there saying, I'm thinking we're going to be pretty close to these numbers as far as interest revenue and that kind of thing, both for 2020 and actually 2021. So we'll see what happens out there with but I don't anticipate the Fed's raising that Fed funds rate for quite some time. And then as those, it won't be like until actually October, November, December, that's actually when we're going to start, some of those investments will start maturing at that point in time. So I think we'll be in some kind of a ballpark here. And then also the other thing is what our reserve balance is, especially with getting the property tax number. That's a, you know, it's a very large number that, you know, it's almost like 70 some million dollars or something like that. Collecting that earlier, we should get a little more interest income off of that. And that's another positive thing out here when we got some of the rates that we're looking at least in the beginning of the year anyhow, not so much now, but at the beginning of the year, that should help us out a little bit. And that's what I think why we're looking at that positive variance so far through May. And then severance tax, you know, when we started into COVID out here, you know, we saw oil prices go from almost $69 a barrel down to like $19 a barrel. Well, they've gone up quite significantly, or at least from that $19 a barrel to up to almost like $40 a barrel. So there is probably some, you know, by the time we get our severance tax payment, and it's interesting because, you know, even though our severance tax is based on coal, how this number really fluctuates more so is based on the oil number and how much shows up in that severance tax fund. I'm not going to try to explain that because that's all I've seen for history and that kind of thing. And it is confidential information. I cannot get at that. It's a state number. So I can't really understand that much better than what I'm telling you right now. But given that we did see that increase from 20, basically a 100% increase from when we started this idea, that number should grow from that 70% decrease. I'm hoping. And we'll see what happens out there. But then there's a demand side too that, you know, people haven't been exactly using as much oil and that kind of thing, because we went from, I think, 100 million barrels per day to down to 95 million barrels per day on a worldwide basis. So that'll be impacted also in this scenario. But again, we get that number in September. That's a ways to wait out there, but we'll know better in September what that's going to, and what that's going to actually be out there. Talked about auto use. Treasure collections, again, basically just saying if we don't, that's very similar. It's basically the same idea as property taxes, where there may be some non-collected, but we will collect it eventually. It's just maybe not this year or something like that out there. E911, basically we're seeing, you know, right now a 2% increase, which isn't a lot, a large number, but you know, we said 5% decrease. We'll see what happens out there. We're not talking a significant chunk of change here, but people I think are still gonna wanna have their cell phone use and that kind of thing. So clerk fees, this is pleasantly surprising. I think, you know, compared to the 2008 recession, which was much more of a, you know, financial in nature, you know, that basically, you know, with the mortgages and that kind of thing, we saw a huge decrease in real estate transactions and that kind of thing out here. Actually, we're not seeing that. Like, I'm showing that we're right on budget with that $4,000 number. And, you know, I've talked to a few, and, you know, Tim, maybe you can talk about this too, but I've talked to a few real estate agents and they're saying there's a whole lot of interest in buying property in Brough County just because they're not in a major metropolitan area. So maybe that one's not, you know, that might be one that, you know, given a few more months that we're going to see that number hang right in there. I don't know yet, but it's definitely different than in 2008.
Just to comment on that as well. So I'm on that, the real estate, the working group with the chamber and the rest. And I was absolutely shocked, and especially like the financing people, the mortgage lending people, they've got applications, just tons of them out there. And I don't know what they're, I guess those people are, must not be hit, getting hit by being unemployed or not have, or their job, their businesses go away. Cause yeah, they said, and the real estate look and surprised me. I'm a Debbie Downer on, I've kind of been worrying about that part on their property tax, the devaluation of our properties and the rest in the long run. And, but they, it seems to be that things are still hanging in there pretty good. So.
But we often get hit later too, right? I mean, in these whole things. So we shouldn't get too excited. I mean, we can be optimistic, but cautiously.
In the 2008 recession, it happened almost immediately because it was having to do with the mortgage industry and that kind of thing. The whole, you know, Freddie Mac, Ginnie Mae and all that kind of stuff, it shut down. I mean, there wasn't transactions happening. So it was I'd say it's significantly different than what we saw. But you know, and I'll just say, you know, like one of the people I was talking to, there's those new whatever apartments, whatever you want to call them, that are down there at the bottom of Hillside Connector. Person had to turn away from that, and then they put it back out on the market, and they made like almost $50,000 on that just by putting it back out on the market. So I don't know. Somewhere's out there, there's some demand. Let's put it that way. And I don't know exactly, you know. Steamboat's not exactly it is, I think, a very expensive market, but somebody has some money to buy things. So we'll, again, we're going back to this uncertainty word out here, but we'll see what we can, you know, as we go forward, this number may hang in there as compared to what happened in 2008. YVRA interfund loan, you know, we're looking, you know, that we just discussed that, what could happen or not happen out there. COVID relief funds, like I said, that's our portion at the 55%. And I fundamentally believe that, you know, we're going to be able, between COVID and whatever, you know, whatever's happened also with the public health in general, we should be able to cover 100% of, I think, and plus FEMA, we should be able to cover 100% of our public health costs. And then it's like whatever we get back from, you know, our unbudgeted expenditures, our budgeted stuff, you know, that's like a new revenue source. And it has, you know, like I looked today this morning to see how, because we had a payroll come through, and it has dropped off significantly as far as like how much we're spending payroll wise and that kind of thing. Because April, May, we averaged $267,000 for payroll. And in June, we only did like $76,000. So that's a significant change out there. But it's still, we're spending, you know, around $76,000. And then operation-wise, we did April and May, we had an average of $59,000. And then June, we were looking at $23,000 as far as operations out there. So, and we didn't see hardly any change in overtime out there. We only ran maybe, I think it was less than $300 compared to where we were through May, and then like in this first payroll, we only saw like another $300 in overtime. But so it's definitely slowed down, and it would just be whether or not, you know, like how we spend our money as far as like whether we're outsourcing it or in-house and that kind of thing. Because if we outsource it, we can definitely, you know, leverage that a little bit better with our FEMA money and that kind of thing, and then use the relief fund money is to cover the basically the match on that kind of thing and what have you out there. So but it, you know, that's a big deal what we got, that 55% or that, you know, that 1.2 million and 55% of that total pie out there. So that's helping out tremendously, I think. And it does end December 30th, but and so that might be, you know, like when we get into ski season and how we make sure we continue to do the contact tracing and what have you out there, so that, you know, people feel comfortable coming here. That's going to be big out there. So
yeah, I think there's a significant percentage of that $1.2 million, though, Dan, that's going to be spent in ways that would be outside of our normal budget. If we can't find a way to justify direct COVID-related expenses for that, then it's going to end up going out for some kind of business relief program or something along those lines. So it may not really help our bottom line that much. It will definitely help for a lot of the expenses that we've already incurred.
Yeah.
But there's going to be new unanticipated expenses that go along with a chunk of that 1.2 million.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Offset salaries that for people who were reallocated to COVID response, right?
That's not going to come anywhere near 1.2 million.
No, you're right.
Mm-hmm. No, that's, I mean, let me look. Here's the where's my COVID budget? No, that's not it.
Don't worry about it right now, Dan.
I was just going to, yeah, because right now we've got like we've got about a half million like that right now. That would be that would be like multiple events out there, that kind of thing. So, and then after that, like I said, it's, you know, it's really kind of dropping. I mean, even with the $70,000, I anticipate like probably, you know, like in June, we had $76,000 worth of personnel. I'm thinking that hopefully without another wave or something like that, that number should go down again. So, so right there, there's probably about, well, close to $600,000 out of that total there. So.
And maybe a bit more between now and the end of the year. Maybe we bump up around 700 or something like that, 750. Still going to leave $400,000 or $500,000 that looking for a home.
Right. So, okay, is there any question on the revenue side there? Is there any question for governmental activities as far as like any?
There's... You've presented a whole bunch of unanswered questions. Thank you very much. So
yeah, we have more uncertainty than we've ever had. Yeah. I'm going to keep saying that, but that's a good statement.
I appreciate the fact that you've at least attempted to put some bookends around that uncertainty, and that's the best we can do. And at least we have an idea of where things are headed.
Okay, and then so then. Any other comments on this?
No, keep going.
Okay. So then we got a couple of business activity. You know, we got the airport and then building department. I'm hoping, you know, like however that comes out with, you know, we definitely got a whole lot of CARES money out there for the airport, and that hopefully that'll take care of what we have going on out there. Now the building department, you know, we're seeing quite a big decrease in building department fees and that kind of thing in let's see, what month am I in? In April and in May, and also so far through June. So that, you know, we might need to look at that a little bit differently, but we do have a really strong reserve balance in there, and we can definitely, like what we did in 2008, we had a graceful slowdown in that department, and we just, you know, we don't want to shut that thing down before, you know, the building shuts down, and or if it does shut down and stuff like that, because there still seems like there's quite a bit of interest to build and that kind of thing. So continue to update ourselves as new information comes in. How's that? Now, as far as what I've got here, we've got, you know, some of these changes that we've got right here. This is the personnel decrease. These are not 100% of these things are going to all go forward. Like I showed you here, this is from the 417 supplemental budget. This is the 835,000, but I know there's some things in that 835,000 don't go into the future and stuff like that. So that's why I moved it down to 752,000. And there's probably more out there that does that same thing. But we're going to, you know, like when we go through this budget process, we can continue to, ask those questions about what's going to happen out there and that kind of stuff. So, and then we've got, I didn't put this, I'm just trying to give you some perspective of this out here. So we got the operating decreases out there, and then we've got, we still got this 3.4 million of capital or 3.5 million of capital that we slowed down on and that kind of thing. So there's that idea out there. And then we got, in the past we've talked about compensation as far as inflation and STEP. I don't know if we're really talking about that kind of stuff right now. If we really have the room to do that kind of thing, but I know there was some interest in maybe keeping the STEP going and that kind of, in that kind of thing out there. So we just got to kind of, see what some of those revenues do and that kind of stuff and go forward from that point. And then it's like the inflation, we'd always do what Denver voter inflation does. And I don't think that's going to be a whole lot this year. There could be some inflation. We'll just have to see what that actually ends up being out there. Compensation decrease, furlough, like we said, I think we got a little bit of time here to figure out what's going to happen with that. And then with this uncertainty and situation like that, like right now it's about governmental activities wise, it's about $160,000 a month that if that we're looking at a 10%. Now 10% is large. I'm just giving you that number as a place to do math with and that kind of thing. Health insurance, that's definitely a possibility. I know we're doing quite well. I don't think we're doing quite well for the right reason in 2020, just because I think people aren't going and having their procedures done or taking care of themselves because they're concerned about getting COVID and what have you. If they go to, well, they can't actually go do it either. So, but in any event, I think there's a possibility that we could look at decreasing our health insurance rate, given that what we know so far and what would happen last year. That's a choice out there that you guys can look at. This is a 10% decrease that we're looking at here. I know FTE additions, only thing I know about in that particular area, there's some discussion about security that we're looking at here as far as the downtown campus and what have you out there. FTE decreases, I know we're not ready really at that point in time maybe, but we do have a list. If we do get to that point, if it needs to happen out there, we do have a list of, the FTEs we decreased or increased over the last 10 years. So that gives you an idea of what's going on out there. Gasoline prices, what we're looking at there is at $31,000 given the Energy Information Agency and what their prices are. Same for diesel at $65,000. That's where we are right now with their forecast. Again, we didn't really see much of a change in chip and seal or asphalt from this year. When we look back in history, it did take the recession numbers a while to kick in as far as chip and seal and asphalt, but they did go down. Don't know if that's going to happen here so much, but it's a possibility. And then last year when we were looking at our leveling budget, we trimmed that down. We didn't put it into the budget, into the 2020 budget, but we do have that $200,000 as far as the leveling course. And then we can also look at the extension of or extending the useful life of assets. And then and one of the other things that we can look at is that there's in 2029, and I know this is looking quite far out in the future, but that's when, that was our low point as far as when we see how sustainable we are and that kind of thing out there. That was when our reserves in the road and bridge budget were going down significantly, are actually going down to the $1 million out there. One thing we could do out there is potentially push some of those infrastructure projects out a year or two or something like that, and that'll free up some dollars also. So But here you got kind of the flavor again. You know, you're looking at a $1 million difference between those two 2021 scenarios and what have you out there. And
so, Dan, yeah. Let me ask you a question. So looking just at 2020, those two numbers are the total, the $1.6 million is in essence our positive budget variances.
Yep.
Has our original $3.8 million 2020 problem been ameliorated by $1.6 million?
Well, what I've got, okay, this is continuing from this prior page here. So I included, so when we look at it from a short-term perspective, we got this Yampa Valley Regional Airport Interfund loan. That's definitely cash that came into this thing. And then we got the COVID thing. So we got, instead of this $1.2 million, maybe we got only like $700,000. So we'd have to drop off about $500,000 off of that COVID number. So if those things happen, we've got roughly somewhere around $700,000 negative without using our capital. With capital, we've got $3.5 million. So there's a cash flow wise, we've got we're doing pretty good cash flow wise. Let's put it that way in 2020.
Or another way to put it, if we had really fully understood the magnitude of these positive budget variances, we could have made the choice to execute more of our capital program.
I don't know if I'd go that far right now, just because we have so much uncertainty out here with our revenue numbers, and we're making some pretty good guesses right now.
I guess maybe to put it a different way, Dan, according to these numbers that you're showing us right here and right now, we may not actually have a $3.8 million 2020 problem. It may be a smaller number.
Yeah, we're talking maybe more like the $700,000. Yes. But that doesn't mean that when you go to 2021, we're going to have a few more months underneath our belt and we'll have a much better picture and that kind of thing.
I understand. I was just making a particular focus on 2020. I understand that we're going to need to save our ammunition for future years. But if one was going to narrowly look at 2020 without being worried about the future, we don't have an immediate crisis of monumental proportions. It's a smaller number crisis.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. I mean, we're talking more like the $700,000 range without looking at capital, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, significantly different. But that, we had a couple, two positive things off of that $3.8 million is, the YVRA loan payment and then also the COVID numbers that we're looking at here. So, those are good things. Yeah.
I kind of have a separate question. It's maybe for all of us, and Mark's not here too, but we're still having this public health discussion and what Scott Calvin's doing and the rest. We've reallocated work resources from their jobs and the rest. And is that going to be eligible in the short term for that CARES money? And Dan, you sat in on that too. So if we debudgeted them in like planning and environmental health, a couple of those people, across the board, at least for half the year, so that's at least $100,000 or $50,000 a year savings per person. If we were defunding them out of our regular county budget and funding them back through this COVID CARES thing, and we would still have our people, would still be doing it, and we would actually be proactive like Carrie's wanting us to do and public health is wanting us to do, to just be out there active as everybody's doing. So I guess, is that money we could rat hole aside for another year after the COVID maybe goes away? Does that make sense, Dan?
If we're using our personnel that we have right now, that's like new money to us. If we're losing like Scott and say some people in the planning department that have already been budgeted, you know, that money, it's not like, you know, because it was already budgeted, it's kind of like coming down to our bottom line, because we had already, you know, it wasn't there before. I mean, or it was already budgeted. So that's available. That's a real new revenue source, if you will, for that. Now, if we go out and we outsourced, say, Scott's work and stuff like that, then that would be like a wash to us. Okay. Now, if we, as far as your question about rat holing it, basically that's, you know, it's going to come down to the reserves in the end, or right, how we look at that kind of thing. And yep. So like right now, what we're looking at is that approximately $600,000 that we're looking at that is helping us out. That's how we kind of came down to that 173,000 at the bottom. Only it's going to be more like $600,000-$700,000, because, you know, I know that not 100% of that COVID relief fund is going to be spent on budgeted expenditures versus unbudgeted kind of things and stuff like that. So as far as rat hole, we can definitely track it.
Yeah, rat hole's maybe the wrong word, but the bottom line, it will save us from having to cut people if we don't have revenue to pay it. I mean, so we're keeping our workforce employed, and whether they're just doing a different job. And again, if we're not shortening the effort that was being put forth in those departments that we're robbing the personnel from, would make sense to reallocate those resources if they're not needed, and reallocate them to COVID work, and have them in the short term pay those expenses for us through the county system. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, I agree with you. And then the only thing I would add to that is if, you know, those people, I don't, you know, see, I'm just going to put Dan's 2 cents in here. They seem like they work in a lot of hours. So if we need to outsource something to give them some breaks or something like that, again, that doesn't cover their, that's, you know, net effect at the bottom line is nothing out there, but make sure we spell them or something like that, whatever that means.
So if I hear what you said, Doug, if I heard it right, it's to the extent that we can reassign our people to cover these additional needs is the extent to which we actually get money for it. To the extent that we subcontract out or hire new people to do this stuff, then there's no extra money.
And that's where I was heading to. Yeah, absolutely. If we hire new people, we got money in, money out. So, but if we have staff FTE available and we have time available in certain departments because of the workload or whatever, based on COVID, we could then reassign those people, cut the wages out of those departments, because they'd be working less for those department and those department tasks, and be reassigning them to COVID work, which then the COVID CARES money would then be able to pick up and take care of. So that's where I was heading.
Yeah, that's what I thought I heard. Keep going, Dan.
Well, I'm kind of, other than, you know, like we've got the business activities, but I think I just explained where I was going with the business activities for the building plant YVRA. So I'm kind of like stopping at this point, as far as like, if you feel like this is a good way to go forth with the budget, 2021 budget, then, or we can continue to kind of like talk about how we want to do something different here.
So your original concept of presenting to department heads these two different scenarios, where in your 2021 budget schedule would that take place?
That's going to start out right from the very beginning when we do the kickoff meeting. We're going to demonstrate this, and then we're going to say, okay, you need to look at your budget, you know, like with the, you know, like basically the 10% decrease or 12% or whatever that 13% decrease is out there. So they would have to be looking at that. I mean, it's across the board right now, but we're, in the end, it will not be across the board. And it's, you know, we'll just see what it takes to get us to where we need to be comfortable in the short term and also the long term out there.
So there's going to be these two scenarios presented. The department heads are going to be, in essence, preparing two different budgets based on these two different scenarios. But then at the end of the day, we're either going to select one of those scenarios or some kind of a hybrid at the end, right?
Right. Yes, it's going to be kind of an incremental. We're going to say, okay, we'll start out with, say, the 21.0, and then it'd be, okay, if we needed to go to 21.1, what is that incremental change out there that we would need to do to get to that next layer?
Does this sound like a lot of additional work for department heads to prepare two different budgets, in essence?
I'm not really saying two different budgets. I'm saying, like, you know, we'll probably settle on one, and then we'll have the incremental increase for it. We'll probably settle on the 21.0, and then we want to know, like, okay, what's it going to take to get to the 21.1 with that increase in expense out there? So it's that's that incremental increase. And then as we go, again, we're trying to be, given the uncertainty that we have out here, we'll see, you know, whether or not the 21.0 is going to be closer to what we think is going to be, or if it's going to be better than that, we might move out of that range, or we might, you know, have to go farther into the system and stuff like that, as far as making the 20, you know, past the 21.1 budget out there and what that means. So, but right now we've got a range a little bit, and we'll as we get more information, we'll deal with that information as we get it. It's got to be flexible, because, like I said, this is probably the most uncertainty we've ever had in a budget right now. And so it's just going to be, you know, like, as we get information in each month, we'll see what that means.
And when department directors prepare their budgets, it's irrespective of what we decide to do with steps and an increase in wages, the percentage increase, the COLA.
Yeah, health insurance, that kind of stuff, because that's always independent, yes. Now, they may ask for, I don't know, if they ask for, you know, additional FTEs, that's a possibility, you know, they could do that. But there is some out there, like with the security situation that we're looking at there. So there's a flavor there. And then everything else is, you know, is kind of a bigger picture look at things and stuff like that. So,
so I guess, when are you presenting this to the department heads?
That's going to kick off. Well, we're going to have, you know, that kickoff meeting. That's going to start basically, I think it's July 1st. I don't know. It's at the end of the month. It's end of July. End of June, beginning of July, something like that. And that we've got a couple meetings scheduled out there. And then, you know, you guys are going to, you're going to start with your introduction to the 2021 budget. And then after that, then I think Mark wanted to go through the rest of the meeting or the kickoff meeting with the department managers after that. And I think we split that into 2 days. So.
So again, so while you're discussing that, Dan, or while you and Mark are discussing, I want to make sure you bring up that other point that I just brought up about the CARES money specifically, because we have a lot of, you know, resources that are applying out there that wasn't eligible for FEMA, but it should be eligible for this CARE money. And we need to be, I mean, I can just think of across the board. I mean, a certain allocation of Moe's time, we know that Robin's already getting paid, or that's where we're allocating that back to FEMA. But we have Cheryl, and we have, again, Scott and these other people that would end up being, could be moving money into the county's bottom line and taking it out of the CARES money for the short run.
Yeah. I've mentioned that in, I want to say out of the two out of the three last department manager meetings, that if you're, you know, make sure that you record your COVID expenses, or, you know, like when you're tracking your time and that kind of thing, to make sure you put that into the COVID line items, whether it's admin or staff. And then also, you know, like, well, the expense or operations doesn't matter so much, because that's real dollars out there. But if I've definitely brought that up the last two times.
So theoretically, none of that really helps us in 2021. Those are all 2020 issues.
Yeah, the relief fund ends on December 30th, but it does, you know, like, it does help us cash flow wise.
It helps us cash flow wise, but in terms of the department directors preparing their 2021 budgets, unless something changes, it's kind of a non-issue for 2021.
So back to your cut down. And I agree, Tim, but back to your comment. So have we got the CARES line item in the personnel separated from the FEMA COVID line, or is it all good and coded to COVID? And so that would be my question to you, Dan. And so while Mo and Carrie are working on, you know, making sure they got that, we have the FEMA request in up to speed and lined out. So anyhow, you understand my question.
So the flow of money, we're going to say that, you know, if there's so for FEMA, the only thing that's eligible on the personnel side is overtime. Okay. And we've only experienced something like $25,000 in overtime right now. And then the other half, other part of that is operations. So again, what we're going to look at there, we're going to try to run everything through FEMA first. Now the positive of that is we get like the 75% of that. And then the question is when will we get paid by FEMA? You know, because we got two kind of scenarios out there that take some, you know, historically, excuse me, it's taken quite a bit of time before we do get reimbursed from FEMA. But then we're also hearing that they've done much better. Well, you know, until we actually get the check in the bank, we'll find out what that is. And then so with the operation side, we'll get this, you know, if we go down that path, we got the 75% on the operation side, 25% we'll be able to get reimbursed by the COVID relief fund out there. So we get 100% on that in the end is what we're anticipating. And then, so like any of the time that is, when I go back to personnel time, so any of the time that people are recording their time, so like Mo or Cheryl or myself or Scott Cowman or whoever out there is putting time down for the COVID number that we have there in personnel, that number there, we will be able to, I believe, as long as we've got an adequate explanation of what we did with that time, it looks like something we did, you know, had to do with COVID, then we should be able to get the COVID relief fund monies on that transaction that we're looking at there. Did that answer your question, Doug?
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Thank you very much. That's what I wanted to hear too. That sounds good.
So hopefully, yeah, we've got the, you know, maybe in one department, we got the data though in the personnel department or in the personnel records that we can figure out, you know, how much is overtime versus how much is straight time, or if you will, exempt time or what have you out there for other individuals and stuff like that. So now it'll take a while to get a grant or a grant reimbursement request going, but we'll get her.
Dan, I think you've done a pretty good job of showing us a whole bunch of uncertainty. Thank you.
Kind of like we started out with, right?
Yep. But again, it feels like it's hopefully falling within these bookends so that we as commissioners can rationally figure out how we ought to move forward.
Yeah, I think we got a range here that we can start dealing with. And then as we get more data in and that kind of thing, we'll deal with it as we get it. And that's going to give us some direction to go as we get the data in.
Any more questions for Dan, you guys?
I wished I would have sharpened or shined up that crystal ball a little better.
It's getting less, I mean, it's not as hazy or whatever you want to call it as it was 2 months ago, though.
Well, I'll tell you one, my biggest takeaway is thank God we got that legislation changed so we can collect on internet sales tax. If that wasn't in place right now, oh my goodness, we would be in a much, much worse place.
That's true. I had one question. This was going back to the, you know, what was being presented to the board. We didn't get really a, you know, typically in the budget presentation, we ask each department to present their accomplishments and goals for accomplishments in 2020, which is going to be probably significantly different, but than what we had anticipated. And then we also asked for, you know, what their goals are for 2021. And there wasn't really an affirmative yes or no on that, but I get you guys what you want, and that we communicate that with the department managers when they make their presentation.
How do you feel about it, Dan? Do you think, how important is it, especially in light of current events?
I'm going to interrupt for a second. I don't think this is an accounting or finance question. I think it's a strategic planning and vision question. I think probably we should check in with Mark on that and think about, as you know, as we've been thinking about how we can be more strategic. I do think though that maybe it has been a little bit of a just kind of, they spend time writing it down and then nobody reads it. So I guess my thought would be, if it's going to be valuable and meaningful, it probably needs to be done in a different way than it has been in the past.
Well, we know that they probably are not going to be able to copy and paste from last year. I don't think it's going to be the same as last year.
Yeah, I mean, the accomplishments might be we survived.
But I guess my thought is what we ask for should probably align with the conversation around strategic planning. I guess I just don't really think that statement of accomplishments and goals is a finance function per se. It's more of a management policy vision kind of a function and strategic planning.
Did we put this discussion on hold? Because I see that Carrie has joined us, and I feel like we're pretty much at the end of our conversation on the 2021 budget, and I want to make sure that we don't make Carrie sit through any of our extended conversation unless we feel like we really need to have it right now.
I will stay tuned to this goals and accomplishment idea.
Okay. That sounds good.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, thanks, Dan, very much. Now that Carrie's with us, are we ready to move on to the discussion of the intern? I believe we probably are.
So ready, Tim.
So, Carrie, would you care to bring that for us, or is Linnea going to be the one to present that?
Hi, it's I believe it's just me. I don't think Linnea was able to join unless she did join. I don't have the list of attendees on my on my phone. Oh, she is.
Well, her name is here. Who knows what she's doing on the camera?
Okay. So I'm happy to. So I graduated from Colorado State University with my master's and have been the supervisor for probably about 10 years of students. And I think it's a really valuable service to the community. I think it's a valuable service back to my profession. And one of the things that I had prior to COVID tried to set up was a student internship program. And I still am interested in doing that. And I actually feel like through this pandemic, there had been and continue to be a lot of learning opportunities for students to participate in. And so I have a list of things that I would like for this intern to be involved with from a learning standpoint. It also complements what the public health department is doing in the sense that she would be able to offer some research type exploration that we don't have the time for right now, but really it would benefit the public health department as well as her as a student. And so I'm interested in her participation in really a lot of research based education. And in addition to that, some of the connections that I think would be valuable in the community are with the Well-Being Consortium, which I also was the co-lead of prior to COVID. And unfortunately that has been put to the side, but I think there's a lot of valuable learning to be done through that Well-Being Consortium effort. And so in addition to just the opportunities for the student to learn and the partnership with the community and with the school, I think that, and I know that we can't guarantee by any means any future employment, and I know we have to be sensitive towards all of that from a county perspective. I can just speak to historically, having students has offered a valuable pipeline for really great candidates for employment in the past. And I think that that's another way to also bring qualified candidates into the community for future employment, where whether it's with the person that I have supervised in the past or just partner agencies. So I'm a big fan of internship process, and I think that it would really be a value add for our department and for the student to come on board. So that's my pitch on interns.
Thank you, Carrie. Questions for Carrie? Comments?
I guess curious, Carrie, about just your capacity right now for supervising an intern. I think legal has been really clear, and I agree that we really can't use interns just to replace regular work, and often they create more work if we're doing a good job supervising them and mentoring them. So could you just speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. So my experience has been actually more of a mutual learning opportunity. And I think that particularly with the research and the evidence-based practice stuff that I would like to have the student do, that it offers an opportunity for us in my supervision time with the student. It actually offers an opportunity for us to take our public health department to the next level with evidence-based practice. And so I think it's a wise investment. I have a lot of experience with what the requirements are for the internship to student hours and all of that. And I think that that can be used actually as a mechanism to get the information that we need and want to communicate through that mutual learning-based model. And so I don't think I can definitely vouch for my own capacity right now. And what I'm having to do is do a lot of that research and try to do the evidence-based practice either with Dr. Harrington or collaboratively with him. And I feel like that student then can be brought into that conversation from a supervisory to student relationship and bring a lot to the table too. So I'm not concerned about that because I feel like it's work or it's research that needs to be happening anyway.
That was really my only question was your capacity, Carrie. I'm persuaded that what you've described is a mutually beneficial arrangement, not only for the intern, but for the county. And I don't think it crosses that line that legal would be worried about. So I'm supportive of this.
Thank you. Had hardly any internships just because of what legal was worrying about. I'm fine with this one as well. I mean, the cost is right, Gary. So, you know, it's cost is right. And again, so I no housing and CSU's taken over the workman's comp and the rest. And so, hey, it looks all good. And again, I'm sympathetic with what Commissioner Melton said too. Just make sure you have time to make it quality for yourself as well as for this individual too. So that sounds good.
Yeah, and I think I'm also supportive of it. As like you said, we've done precious little of this, and it sounds like with Carrie's experience and the way she's looking at doing this, it may create a model for other internships that we might want to consider in the county. So I think I'm ready to entertain a motion on this unless you guys want to talk about it some more.
So Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the internship through CSU and authorize your signature on the agreement upon final approval by the legal department.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you, Carrie. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right. We are ready to move on to my favorite part of the day. COVID-19 work session.
Oh, I thought you meant adjourning.
Well, there's that too. I do have some chores I need to attend to.
Is the legislature out of session today, or did it work through yesterday, evidently?
I think they might be done, Doug. Or they're pretty close.
I think they worked through yesterday, so, or at least Saturday, I know. So we got a notice. I don't know if you've heard anything from the CCAT, but AG&C said, well, they were almost done. I'm going, almost? Really? Okay. Good for that. Anyhow, I just wanted to ask that real quick. It was on my
list. I don't have any idea. I don't remember when they were supposed to adjourn. They weren't going to meet for very long, though.
Well, I thought they were going to, they said they were going to adjourn on Friday.
Oh, did they? And then
Friday,
they were.
So that was the date.
I've had a hard time keeping up. It's been so fast and furious in this last little bit here.
Yeah, honestly, it is. What they've been doing this year has not been at the top of my radar screen. So probably should
have. All the bills that I had been tracking closely, they finished up with, because there was one to support reinsurance, which ended up passing. The policing one ended up passing. The vaccine one, I haven't been watching the vaccine one closely, but it's it's a hot topic for some people.
Vaccines would be popular nowadays.
I'll keep my mouth shut on that one. So I don't know. I don't have any items for discussion. I did see that the governor has a press conference at 3 today, and I think there'll be some important information.
Hopefully the kind of information that would render our variance request moot.
I don't think it's going to render it moot, but it may modify what we want to include in there. Because I don't think he's going to go up to 250 people this afternoon.
No, I doubt that. Yeah. You know, I went to Eagle County's website again, because I've been curious. Again, you've heard me talk about their dashboard. And I just went through and ran the numbers for the last 20 days. And according to their dashboard, they've had 40 new cases in the last 20 days, which is 2 per day, which would be 14 per week, which would be 28 in a 2-week period, which puts them right over that 26 case threshold.
Well, they're bigger than we are, though, so they can have double. I think their population's about double ours.
Yeah, it's about 50. Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah.
Oh, so they would be
26 per 100,000. So we can have 6.5. They can have 13 in 2 weeks.
So they've got 28.
So they're probably in that more that medium, right? Wouldn't that put them?
Yeah, I think it. It makes you wonder if they're really headed in the right direction. I mean, and of course, all the national news, you just read so much about increased cases, and I guess it's just falls under that heading of uncertainty. Nobody really knows where this is headed. And we've all talked openly about the fact that we know that as we open up, we're going to see some more cases. And I guess to the extent that it doesn't push us over limits where the state would come in and drop the hammer again and close things down, and obviously as long as we don't exceed hospital capacity, I guess we'll just keep moving forward here. We'll never know whether we did the right thing or the wrong thing until well after the fact.
Well, I think it's also tempting to compare ourselves to Eagle County. You know, we have a neighbor on the other side that's in a completely different situation that hardly had any cases at all. And so, you know, every community is different. The people who live there are different. The people who travel there are different. The capacity of the healthcare system is different. I think it's also noteworthy that we have a health a public health department that has what, two and a half FTEs or something. Yeah. And no, not even, because Carrie's not even full-time in our health department. And I think they have 8 or 9 or 10. I mean, it's huge compared to us. And so it's not just about the hospital, and it's not just about how many cases. It's also about the capacity to handle it from a public health standpoint. And so I think that's where some of those requests Carrie's making for additional staff is going to be really critical in continuing to be able to reopen too.
She made that point today. It was a good point to the extent.
It is a good point.
Increase testing, increase our ability for contact tracing is the extent to which we can continue to open up.
So my question is, and I've been wondering this all along, how many are out there in the weeds or out there in the sagebrush that we don't know about that are, what, I mean, if you're not employed right now in the public health department, I'm sorry. So I don't know. We just can't recreate these people overnight. I mean, they certainly have to have some technical expertise at least, unless these are all trainable positions as well. So
I think though, Doug, if you think about what Carrie has experienced, she's found a lot of retired folks in our community that have some background. And so if you're thinking about hiring them on like a short-term contract basis, that's probably more doable than hiring them on full-time if they're already retired, but they may be interested in helping out, right, in a pandemic and doing some of that work. So I wouldn't be too pessimistic about it yet.
Oh, the vulnerable ones, just so we have a remote location for them to work.
Yep, I gotcha.
Great year to be graduating from college with a public health degree, huh?
Right. Well, there's a couple public health directors that are not employed anymore. Apparently, Clear Creek lost theirs. I don't know what happened there. I don't think they fired that person. I think that person left, or I don't know. They didn't say, but I was on a call with them the other day, and they said, hey, if anybody has an idea about where we can find a public health director, let us know.
Oh, boy.
I've done that. Yeah,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Doug.
No, I didn't have anything else.
He has better things to do, Tim. He's ready to go.
Yeah, I don't have anything in particular. I think we talked about everything I wanted to get into today. So I'm happy to adjourn if you guys are.
Yep, I'm great.
All right, see you tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yes, indeed. Thank you.
Bye-bye.